This is the Quality News Network. In Washington today, more than 200 active-duty U.S. soldiers are calling for the prompt withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. At the White House, President Bush said that we would win the war in Iraq as long as we didn't leave too soon. He also said that the United States military is adjusting its tactics in response to the situation in Iraq. Bush conceded that many Americans were not satisfied with the situation in Iraq and added, quote, "I'm not satisfied either." This month, 93 American service members and 300 Iraqi security forces have died in Iraq. However, in Iraq, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki told reporters today that no one has the right to impose a timetable on his government. Yesterday, in a press conference with the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, U.S. General George Casey said he thought Iraqi forces would be ready to take over security in their country within 12 to 18 months. In Iraq today, U.S. and Iraqi forces raided Sadr City, a Shiite militia stronghold led by anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. Al-Maliki, who received political support from al-Sadr, strongly disavowed the operation, which left five people dead. In Iran, a semi-official news agency reports that officials are preparing to inject gas into a second batch of centrifuges sometime this week. This announcement comes as the world powers are closer to introducing a draft resolution against Iran at the United Nations Security Council. North Korea is threatening that South Korea will pay a heavy price if it supports international sanctions against the North. When asked about that threat today at his press conference, President Bush said that the leader of North Korea likes to threaten. In Moscow, Russian President Vladimir Putin stated he would not run for a third term. However, he insisted that after leaving office in 2008, he would retain influence over Russia. In southern Afghanistan, 48 suspected insurgents were killed in three separate confrontations with NATO-led troops. Elsewhere, a truck carrying more than 10 tons of marijuana was seized by Afghan police and NATO troops. The New Jersey Supreme Court, in a 4-3 decision today, affirmed that committed gay and lesbian couples should have the same civil rights as married heterosexual couples. The court has given New Jersey lawmakers 6 months to amend the state's laws to allow some form of marriage or civil union for gay and lesbian couples. Tropical Storm Paul is expected to hit the Mexican coastal town of Mazatlan today, bringing floods and mudslides with an expected 10 inches of rain. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Researchers with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration say that 60% of the world's coral reefs could be dead within 25 years, partly due to global warming. In an effort to fight climate change, Australia plans to build one of the world's largest solar power plants in the state of Victoria, a $57 million venture. The Federal Reserve met for the second day today and decided to leave the key interest rate unchanged at 5.25%. For the sixth straight month in a row, sales of existing homes fell. In September, they dropped by 1.9%, according to the National Association of Realtors. Also, the median price of a single-family home fell 2.5% to $219,800. Berkshire Hathaway set a record on Monday with shares closing at $100,000. The investment company owns more than 60 companies and has major investments in firms such as H&R Block and Coca-Cola. Toyota is recalling about 30,000 Scion TC sports cars due to potentially faulty airbags. The recall involves 2005 and 2006 model years. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.62 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones reached a new record high, closing up 7 points at 12,135. The NASDAQ was up 12 points at 2357, and the S&P 500 was up 5 points at 1382. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Carla McLaren. It's 5 minutes past.
can change. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Are you ready for a Wednesday evening prayer meeting experience? I am Brother Bob Kincaid. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and I welcome you to our service this evening.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
You know what I want to be? I want to be a Democratic consultant. Now, I don't want to be one of those professional loser Democratic consultants. I want to be like, you know, a Vince Lombardi Democratic consultant. For all I know, Vince Lombardi was a Republican. It doesn't work with me. I want to be a fighting Democratic consultant. Who are these people? These so-called Democratic consultants who don't know how to respond to filthy attacks by the Republican Party. Who are they? They're millionaires. I know they're millionaires. But, I was raised on, you know, from the time I was in the tiny little guy and getting stories about Thomas Alva Edison, who said, genius is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. That ain't a Democratic consultant today. Mostly the Democratic consultants sit around and lose and make millions for it. How do I know this? I know this because so far I have not seen a TV ad that says, you know, just little like a little slideshow, just like the RNC one, that shows pictures of Osama and says, why are we still talking about this guy? And then shows a picture of George Bush. Ask this guy. That's easy. I mean, I didn't even have to do any navel gazing to come up with that. And in Tennessee, what is being referred to now as the Tennessee mudslide. In Tennessee, where it's just this hopeless sleaze, day in and day out, racist. The NAACP finally came out and said, look, you know, we can't be quiet anymore. This business with Harold Ford, man, it's racist. It is racist. And fancyford.com, as we discussed, is nothing but a string of bigotries. On the one hand, they're alleging that he is a carousing playboy, Harold Ford Jr. On the other hand, they've got the website all done up in pastel colors. And you know, do you know he spent $6 million on flowers? This is the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. There are Republican senators from generations past who are rolling in their grave over this filth. But I know that I could be a successful Democratic consultant because the way you respond to that, because you know it's been pointed out, you know, all this crap is racist, it's bigoted, it's filthy, it's dirty, it's nasty, and the best that Bob Corker can do is come out and say, well, dang, I don't know how to make them stop. Darn, I sure wish they would, but I ain't got no control. I don't know who to contact. He said that. I don't know who to contact. I don't know who to contact to make them stop this racist, bigoted filth. Well, this is why I want to be a Democratic consultant. because the next thing you do is you put an ad on the air that said, and you use the quote from Bob Corker. I don't know who to contact to make him stop this crap. And you say, if he doesn't, and you know, as the what the ad does is the ad says, if Bob Corker doesn't know how to use a phone to call the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, what kind of senator is he going to be?
Well, I don't know. I'm new here in the Senate, and I don't know where the bathroom is, so I'm just going to stand here and pee on the floor.
I mean, there's an antidote to all this. All you've got to do is want to fight back. That's all you've got to do.
I don't know how to make them stop this racist stuff.
Well, yeah, Bob, you do, buddy, but the fact of the matter is you don't want them to stop. You want to play that race card all the way to November 7th, and you want to revel in it. Let's just send, for God's sakes, let's send Bob Corker a few stars and bars so he can go ahead and wrap himself in it while he campaigns. Hell, George Macaca Allen probably has a few stars and bars he could loan him. All you got to do is want to fight back, and you too can be a Democratic consultant. No, I take that back. All you got to do is not want to fight back, and you too can be a Democratic consultant. Who is down there? Who's I mentioned this a few days ago. I remember that wonderful, wonderful documentary from 1992's Clinton campaign called The War Room. And it was a bunch of really smart people sitting around and counterpunching, and sometimes punching first. You know, I guess we can take some solace in the possibility that the oxymoron Flush Flimball, who flies to the Dominican Republic with a pocket full of Viagra to a destination known for little boy sex prostitution, we can take some comfort in the fact that Flush Flimball went to Missouri. He didn't go, but he's from Missouri, and he effectively may have torpedoed the Senate campaign of Jim Talent by saying that. My friends, it's obvious. Michael J. Fox is either not taking his medication or he's acting. After all, he is an actor. That's good. I hope. But, you know, if you're running downhill to November 7th and you as a Democrat think, oh, we've got it all sewed up because Dear Leader was out there. Dear Leader had a press conference today. And Dear Leader said, I'm telling you, we're going to win. And one guy even tried to press him and he said, well, but if you knew in your heart of hearts you were going to lose, would you tell us then? And he said, if I thought in my heart of hearts, I would tell you. But I know in my heart of hearts, we're going to win. How does he know? What does Ken Melman know? What does Karl Rove know? What have they told George Bush? What have they told Dick Cheney? What kind of conversations have gone down in the dark and the still of the night when the only people about are cut purses and crooks? What do they know? What do they know about the election? You have to wonder. But that's where we begin this evening. Anybody else want to be a Democratic consultant with me and teach some people to fight? The days of emery boards with candidates' names on the back and packages of sunflower seeds with the candidate's name on the front are over. What you are listening to right now is the future of modern campaigning. The internet, the net roots, that is where we will motivate a Democratic base that has largely been ignored in this campaign season. Everybody wants the moderates. Everybody wants the centrists. The centrists are in the middle of the road, and everything in the middle of the road is a corpse. I know. I live in West Virginia. The middle of the road's littered with dead deer and possums and raccoons. And there ain't nothing good in the middle of the road. Motivate the people who are willing to work and fight. Right? Right. So this is a Wednesday evening prayer meeting edition of Head On. You want to jump in on the conversation? You're welcome to 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, Head On. I'm Bob.
A routine visit to the pediatrician costs more than a minimum wage worker earns in one full day. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
I'm a single mom and I have to work two jobs just to pay the rent and put food on the table. It's really hard.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the Supreme Court? I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what goes on inside the Beltway, it helps to have a Beltway insider. And I know what's going on in Washington because I used to work there as a congressional attorney. And my sources still give me the inside scoop. So check out the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Spin it, DJ Agnes. Thank you, John Fox. 20 minutes after the hour, and let's go straight to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Robert calling from Japan. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob. Doing okay?
Doing good. You?
That's okay. I mean, I have a good story for a prayer meeting tonight.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay. You know, I've been trying to become a deacon now in the Anglican Church in Japan.
Right.
And I was supposed to be ordained in November. And so I learned, I think 2 weeks ago, that they decided that I did not have the calling for that. And that they wanted me to go another whole year of this.
Oh, for the love of it.
Yeah. Now, let me give you some background on this, okay?
Okay. You can be a deacon in the Cathedral of Common Sense, if that matters,
well,
Robert.
That this is where the story's going, okay? So they're losing four priests next year. They've had to close down one church in Moji Ward to make it into a parking lot. They're going to be closing down more churches, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the old priests, they're all, 60 years old, 70 years old. They desperately need new people to take over the church, right? Now, I was the only one on this island to say, okay, let me do this. And this is all volunteer. So I'm going to be a volunteer priest. I mean, even after I'm ordained, I'm doing this all for free.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no monetary reward here. I've done over 90 sermons, right? I've cleaned the church. I've done pretty much whatever they wanted to do. And after all of this work, they said, well, I've also had to do reports, too. So a report, believe this, on catechism, a report on church history. which I think I talked about. I did a report on the illustrated history of Christianity, and every single page in that book is almost blood-soaked. And, I mean, most people don't know really how bloody Christianity has been and how the priests and the bishops have actually instigated a lot of the wars. So I did a report on that, and then also reported doctrine and liturgy. I mean, the driest of the driest of the driest of did it all. And so after all of this, they said, well, you know, even though their church is drowning, I'm reaching down to help the drowning man. They said, nope, not good enough. Reports were not long enough. So I did 16 pages, single spaced. No, that wasn't long enough. So. And
am I to understand, Robert, in the Episcopal Church in Japan that there is a dullness requirement?
I think so. Think about it, Bob. These are conservative priests, and the one thing that conservatives are afraid of are exciting new fresh people because they get the attention. And so also I represent the new generation, and you know, I'm young, 46 years old, I'm 3 years older than you, and they're afraid of change, I think. And the priest that is bringing me in is American. He's like 70 years old. He was amazed when he heard this decision. He said, well, you know, Bob's decisions, he's got the calling. He's been giving sermons. His sermons are better than mine. And they said, well, no, wait, you can copy sermons from off the Internet. Which, you know, when I heard this, I just went through the ceiling because I'm not a plagiarist.
I was going to say, so Jesus is now endorsing plagiarism.
Yeah, exactly. And so the priest countered, goes, no, it's too personal, it's too, you know, specific to our situation. And I've taken some of his sermons and gone to Australia and preached about them. And they kind of shrugged it all off. And also, I've written 4 books of fables that are published, 2 books of new Aesop fables, and a book on Buddhist fables, and a new book on Japanese fables, and I'm writing a book on Christian fables, which will be out next year.
Is this all in English or Japanese? Right?
Yeah, it's all in English, yeah.
Okay.
You can get them off the Internet. I'm going to reissue the new Aesop fables. I got a couple of nice fables about the bushes in that new Aesop fable. I made Jeb Bush into a crow. So
that works.
Yeah. I'm going to send them to you as a Christmas present. So, but you know, all of this wasn't good enough for them. So my decision was, well, you know, and then also one of the priests, there's 2 people that were going through this program. And one was a young conservative from Missouri, Reagan-loving guy. I've got into many, many arguments with him. And one of the priests from Kumamoto refused to teach him. And do you know why?
No.
Because he was from a diocese that voted in favor of for the bishop in Massachusetts, Robinson, the gay bishop.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, oh, well, I can't teach someone like that. He's from that same diocese. And so there's a lot of nearsightedness, meanness. I mean, I'm sort of glad I've taken this, Bob, because I actually know what the priesthood is like now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, lots of stories about bullying. The American priest, you know, the Japanese priest would watch him do Ash Wednesday and then lay into him about not folding the linen correctly. Or another priest would call him over the phone and just yell at him. So if you actually, I mean, most people don't know the priest. You know, they see him for Sunday, 1 hour. But if you go through this kind of program and you actually meet with them and sit down, you realize that they're not actually holy men at all. And that's what I've realized, too. So it would be insane for me to try to hobnob with these people, but...
Well, it would, and it sounds to me like, one of the things that I caught that you said earlier, Robert, was that they fear change. Change is coming to them, whether they fear it or welcome it. And
yes, you either accept change, or change happens on top of your head, and it's not pleasant.
Well, exactly, and the thing is that the change that is coming to them is the abject death of what they profess to believe in.
Right, right. Remember that story I told you about the homeless guy right outside the doors and feeding the homeless people?
Yeah.
And they said, well, if you bring that bowl, you tell them it's not from the church, you tell them it's from yourself. And so that's what I'm going to be doing from the Sundays from now on, is going out and feeding homeless people. And when I give that bowl of, whatever, that bento lunchbox, I'm going to say, this is not from the church, this is from me. And because I feel, as I said, the church is in the connections that you form with the people. It's not a building, it's connections. And if you want true communion, you give a homeless person some food, and that is true communion.
I was hungry, and ye fed me not.
Exactly.
I was in jail, and ye did not visit me. I was sick, and listen, you're when you go and you do that, you will be far closer to the spirit that motivates us all than you will be than you probably have ever been inside that building, Robert. And I'm not being cruel to you. I hope you understand it.
Oh yes. I mean, I've you have to go. I felt I had to go through this experience to actually see it and actually know it, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's what it's become, as so many other churches have become, is a club. And they're comfortable, and they want to, you know, they want to have the Eucharist, and they want to call down God, and then they want to bring God over to the coffee and donuts. And that's it. You know?
Does God like sprinkles?
Yeah, exactly, right. So what I'm going to do is, I've sort of decided, because I'm in a Buddhist country, you know, and I'm going to take my journey outside of the church and sort of be kind of a spirit guide. I mean, helping Buddhists or agnostics or whoever more or less decide their own spiritual journey. I'm not going to be a priest. I'm just going to be helping others to find themselves. So having a book of, of beliefs, you know, I believe, and the other half is I don't believe. Because doctrine, I think, is so 20th century. Here's this massive information. Believe it. Boom.
No, I was thinking it was more like 11th century, but
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I admire the process you've gone through, Robert, and I admire the conclusion to which you have come. Because none of us on this planet gets to pick or choose where or who or what we profoundly change. And
exactly.
These are all pebbles tossed into a pond.
Right.
And there is no telling where the ripples from feeding one hungry individual will go.
Right.
But they cannot help but go to a good place.
Well, I think this is why the young people are, you know, it's like a revolving door. If we have any young people that walk in the church, they walk out the next day, only the next week. They're not coming back.
Well, what's there for them?
Exactly. I mean, because they're not applying any of the ideas. And, if you're an atheist or an agnostic, and you watch these rituals and the incense and all this, you go, what's this all about?
See, I've got a taste for the bells and whistles. I love, you know, the Christmas, you know, I'm a real sucker for Christmas traditions. I love a Latin mass because it does something inside my gut, but it only does something inside my gut because I was raised up to appreciate that kind of thing. You know, on the other hand, you know, what's a young person, what's any person to get out of somebody who really folds linens well? That's not feeding the sheep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, God, you know, Jesus didn't say, feed my doctrine, feed my liturgy. He said, feed my sheep, you know.
Yeah.
The other issue is the idea, you know, of the sermons. And I don't like the format of sermons because it doesn't develop people's spirituality or creativity. And if you're not creative in your spiritual journey, you're pretty much dead in the water. And I've listened to one sermon in which the American guy, 70 years old, was talking about Paul's statement of, the leader is appointed by God. All leaders are appointed by God. And I so dearly wanted to raise my head and go, BS, sorry, don't believe it. And he was waxing, and tears were coming down his eyes about the Japanese emperor, and the Japanese emperor, the one that started World War II, he was appointed by God.
Yeah, but see, all of this is contextual, Robert, because you have to understand that Paul, you know, and you do, of course. I'm not lecturing to you or to anyone else, but Paul's letters are written in a period of time before the rise of Nero.
Yeah.
Okay. And even Nero, if you do the scholarship on it, A. N. Wilson has a wonderful book called Paul Inside the Mind of the Apostle. In which he points out that, you know, most of the Christian community like, oh, Nero persecuted the Christians. No. The real persecutions didn't come for a long time. The business about putting them in leather jerkins and hanging them on light stands in the Vatican gardens and dousing them with olive oil and lighting them up had more to do with the fact that they were accused and believed widely by the populace of having started the great fire of Rome.
Right, right.
Well,
I mean, it's also Paul's attempt to try to con the Republican, I mean, not the Republican, but the Roman leadership into thinking, well, you know, hey, you know, you're appointed by God, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, we're benign. We're benign.
We're benign. And,
you know,
and it's you know, him, it's just him conning the, you know, and so you've got to realize, hey, this is Paul's trying to con him and also not be beaten so much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the beatings had to get tiresome after a while because, he tells us he took some whoopings.
Yeah, he was tired of it. So he wrote some, you know, lines, and then we, now, this is like Catholic countries, I've heard. often have a lot of dictators and despots because they, the Catholic Church will say, well, the leader is appointed by God. But my feeling is that you get the leader that you kind of deserve. Sometimes.
Well, not only that, but it's this business of finding two or three words and hanging an entire policy on it. You know, the idea, well, let's see, Christians can go kill other people because Peter owned a sword.
Right.
You know,
And young people today, especially in Japan, you understand where they're very logical and rational. They're just not taking this. They're not believing it. And so I just want to start off where I'm also learning, have a discussion group, get rid of the sermon, have a discussion group, and we go through different, the Buddhist, the Mahabharata, the Bible, whatever things, and we start picking out things that we like to believe, and we share, and we discuss, so I can learn and from them as well. And,
right.
So I'm looking at, okay, what comes next? And I think, pretty much allowing people to start choosing what they think, because they're going to do that anyway. And getting rid of the robes, prancing around in robes, and getting rid of morning prayer and divinite, which, we mumble these words again and again and again. It becomes meaningless. It becomes a routine.
Exactly. So. You know, I had a conversation with our good friend John Fox down in Australia, and we were talking about, the churches largely provide a social center for a community. And, that's why, the old timers and some of the new ones, too, were sort of appalled by the fact that as I was growing, the church built a bowling alley.
Right.
Because they have to set themselves apart. It's not good enough to go out to the local lanes, among the heathens and sinners and bowl. Right. No, we have to bowl in the quiet, sanctified protection of our church. And of course, then the money comes back into the church too. That's
exactly.
if you have league bowling night out at the local lanes, that's money going out of the church for heaven's sakes, and we can't have that. So much of this is dead stuff. This is not speaking to anyone's spirit. I've got an article here. It turns out there's a big conflagration brewing inside the Southern Baptist Convention over whether or not the people who talk in tongues can be Baptists. and I say, congratulations to the Southern Baptist Convention. You've pushed yourself into the weirdo fringe of religion so long that the snake handlers are coming for you now. And, the best to you.
Yeah.
You've done the right thing. You've come to all the right conclusions, Robert. Mm-hmm. And like I said, for what it's worth, we haven't really handed out many appointments here on Head On, but I have no problem at all making you Archdeacon of the Cathedral of Common Sense.
Okay, thank you.
But
when you walk down this road and you actually see the priest firsthand and you mingle with them, you see that at the end of the day they're not holy people. What there are is functionaries, what I call, carrying out basic functions. And the Japanese, they're very, if it's not on the function list, they're not going to do it. So there was a woman that's a daughter of one of the other priests that's a little bit mentally ill, and she's in the hospital. And so I was saying, I think we should go visit Mitsue and see how she is. And I'm telling this to the Japanese priest, and he listens to me for a little bit, and he turns and walks away. Because visiting her in the hospital is not on the list. And I was just shocked.
Well, do you think some of this is like a cultural failure to translate?
No, because because he understood what was being said. This was a lot of this was said in English and Japanese.
No, I'm not talking about linguistically, I'm talking about culturally.
Culturally. Yeah. Well, part of it, yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why the church is dying here. I think it's got 5 more years and then it's gone. Because they only got 800 more members left and they're losing members every year. So, and our congregation, the English congregation, is only down to 3 people now. I'm not preaching to 330, it's down to 3. And the Japanese is down to 25, maybe.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's a, religion, as it is now, it's disappearing. And I was talking to my Japanese colleague, another English professor, who is a Buddhist priest. Now, he's in that position because his father is. It's a hereditary thing. And he hates it because he realizes that he's a cog in this huge machine, and he says, I can't affect any change. It's a huge ship, and there's meetings, and there's no evangelizing among the priest because there's this huge disconnect because they're too busy with the meetings and they're too busy and they don't care anymore. And so he's really disaffected with it. And he says, if he could get out of it, he wouldn't do it at all. So he cheered me on. He said, you made the right decision.
Well, I don't think anyone with a shred of with a moral sense could come to any other. It's just the right thing to do. And but you know, do not make the mistake, Robert, of thinking that what you're talking about is unique to where you are.
Right.
I mean, the fundamentalists had a huge conclave or clavern or whatever it is fundamentalists have to discuss the fact that children, when they get out of high school and go off to college or get away from mommy and daddy, get the first apartment, whatever it is they do, they leave and they never come back.
Right.
And that, you know, what are we doing wrong? What are we doing? It's not what they're doing wrong. It's what they're. It's that they are. There's that word, fundamentally wrong.
Right.
They're preaching literalism to people who have no use for it. Mm. You know, they're trying to tell people, they're trying to tell kids who with their own lying ears and eyes can know that snakes don't talk.
Right.
That they do.
Right.
They're trying to convince them that crackers turn into meat.
Right.
They're trying, you know, all of these things. You know, one of the silliest ones that I recall growing up in the Baptist church is that we couldn't have real wine at communion.
Okay.
We got red grape juice, pasteurized, so as not to ferment.
Oh, okay.
And it was patiently explained to us, and it not just the children.
Right.
It was explained to the adults, too, that even though the word wine is used in the Bible, what that really means is grape juice. Because they didn't have wine like what we know wine to be now. And the thing is, I found out later by talking to a guy who had been to the big Baptist seminary in Tennessee. They preach that, they teach that as actual dogma and doctrine.
Wow.
You know, when and one of the best commentaries I saw along these lines, the guy Jeff Smith, he had his problems, but on the Frugal Gourmet, in one of his books, he writes that the glory of God is manifested in the grape.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says, when that grape is hanging on the vine, the yeast cells that will turn it to wine are living on the skin.
Okay.
And that if you merely let the grape be a grape, it will eventually be a component of wine. And he said the same thing applies to barley and wheat.
Mm-hmm.
That the yeast that will turn it into bread lives on the grain itself.
Right. Well, and, I mean, imagine the meetings that went on just to come to that decision. I mean, this is what they kind of wanted me to sit through. And I was like, whoa, I mean, it's hard enough to understand this all in Japanese as well anyway. But even if I did understand it, I'd probably go crazy. The other issue with this one was that he was telling me, once you're ordained, you have to obey the bishop. When I heard the word obey, it was like a chicken bone in my throat, you know, another 20th century concept.
Yeah.
So, you know, he ordered me to, you know, churches far away, and my whole Sunday's, you know, blown away. And so, well, you know, sacrifice to the church.
Yeah, obey the bishop.
Yep.
Bishop ain't got time to make that drive, but you do.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And this is the problem. You know, they need to get new members so to survive. And they're not getting off their butts to even do that. You know, they're not even, you know, it's not on their radar. It's just, you know. It's like these people that you're talking about, the wine and the, you know, it's the grape juice, and they spent lots of time and energy to come to that decision. But never mind the homeless people.
Right. There were hours, I'm sure, of doctrinal discussion about the grape juice while people went hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, how am I supposed to give credence to that? How am I supposed to have any respect for that? How am I supposed to have any respect for an organization? Well, I was talking about the Tennessee senatorial race. The Baptists are out there waiting for their marching orders. When they see with their own lying eyes that the Republican candidate is quietly condoning abject racism and bigotry in the campaign process, but if the Baptists, if the fundamentalists are told to go out and vote for Corker, that is by God what they are going to do.
That's what they'll do. Yeah. so, I mean, my feeling was, now I'm not here to be programmed or to be ordered about, or, you know, or to learn this dry material of liturgy and catechism and end up becoming a bully like they are. I said, no. So I've got to start, you know, coming up with an idea, a concept of guiding other people from whatever religions they're from or whatever position they're from, and letting them chart and learn from me, and I learn from them. And I think if there's anything that's going to come after this church, it's going to be it has to be in that way, because people today are just too smart, and they don't want to be told what to do and told what to think.
And they don't want to be asked to check their common sense at the door and be rational people for 6 days out of the week, but on the seventh they believe in magic.
Exactly. Yeah.
That you can't do that. You can't do that to people. I mean, it's a form of, you know, we've defined legally in modern culture physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. We still haven't gotten around to defining spiritual abuse.
Yeah.
And that is a form of spiritual abuse. To expect people who go to doctors and take pills and use technology that is based on hardcore science and not 10 cents worth of faith to chuck all that out the window and come in and believe in magic on Sunday.
Mm. Well, magic that doesn't do anything at the end of the day. It's just a show. And
yeah, it don't even make it rain.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the word that was actually told to me by the American priest. You know, just, I wouldn't wear black shoes. I don't have a pair of black shoes, and I could spend $70 on a pair, but he said, you know, black shoes are a little bit more, you know, it makes it more serious, and don't look at someone going through the door because it's a show. And
yeah, because people are going to follow your shoes to Jesus, not your heart. You know, oh.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know,
you're doing the right thing getting away from this dead place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is why people, you know, this is why people come and they go, because you leave from something that's dead and sinking. You don't stick around. I mean, if there was something, you know, magic there and uplifting, they'd be sticking around. So.
Well, right. I mean, that's why things like these mega churches do succeed, is people go there on Sunday and, you know, there's a rock and roll band on the stage with better equipment than the Who, for the love of God. There's jumbotrons, and there's clapping, and there's singing, and hallelujah, and then quietly in the middle of it, you're told to vote Republican.
Right.
But you come away from there going, wow, you know. And people, you know, it's pure appeal to emotionalism. Most of these mega churches are non-denominational, and they are, in fact, cults of personality.
Right.
But that's okay, because most, you know, sociologically speaking, all religions begin as personal cults.
Well, I mean, the one time that we actually had 100 people come in for one service was when we had this the choir, which actually are, you know, very good singers, but they're not Christian, and they had brought this black gospel group in, and so the Japanese, oh, let's go see these people, and they did their gig, but they also had their own CDs that they were selling, and, you know, they were on the tour, and it was an interesting show of entertainment, but it wasn't actually, I think, devoid of any kind of spirituality, but, you know, it brought the crowds in.
Well, and that's, you know, that's what it does.
Yeah.
You know, Robert, I really appreciate everything you've brought this evening. This is it's a heck of a personal story, and I'm glad you were willing to share it with folks, because there is, I mean, I will agree with the fundies in one regard, and that is there is a spiritual hunger.
Mm.
And but what you're, you know, what I'm finding out talking to you is that hunger is not being fed. And if we as liberals, if we as progressives, thinking people, want to change, you know, want to change this nation, want to change the world, we're going to have to feed that spiritual hunger. Mm. And we've got to do it first and foremost. And, you know, that's why I admire you going out and feeding people, and that church didn't give this to you, I did.
Yeah.
You know, that makes sense to me. And, you know, there are people who could be won over to rationality if we figured out a way to communicate that rationality and create community in the process.
Right. Well, I think there is a next step from, you know, organized religion, and it's just about thinking it through and allowing people to be more creative with their own spirituality and chart their own journey. And I'm not going to have disciples. I mean, that's another 11th century concept. Everyone's going to be their own disciple. They're going to be their own teacher. But yeah, anyone that's fed up with organized religion, I would say, you know, go out and do it yourself.
Yeah, if you've got the basic idea of, and you know, it all comes down to don't crap on humanity.
Yeah.
If you've got that part down, you're qualified to go out and try to ease aching humanity's woes.
Hmm.
And this, you know, this is it's not just religious, it's political. And it is sociological, and it's cultural, spiritual, physical. Everything is manifest, you know, and that's why I think the focus is there in Jesus' words about that kind of thing, because it encompasses everything. If you feed someone who is hungry, that person may very well change the world. If you visit someone when they are in prison and you talk to them and treat them like a human being, maybe they won't come out of that prison a worse crook than they went in.
Right. It's also important to say, there for the grace of God go I.
Right.
I could be helpless.
I have had my fat pulled out of the fire by more decent people more times than I care to count. And it's not because I'm a bad human being. It's because bad things happen to good people sometimes. And if we and others like us recognize that, we will be there to help and pick up pieces.
Right.
And say, look, you know, this isn't the universe telling you to quit the stage. This is, you know, move on. This happens. Right. Go. It's, you know, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. I just wanted to share that little story with you.
Well, I'm so glad you did, Robert, and I look forward to reading the fables, too.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Bye. And have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Robert off to his Thursday morning in Japan. And we wish him a very, very good day. Let's keep it rolling. Let's go to Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, around here, you never know.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm figuring you're living in Tennessee. The first thing you do, you get in the door, you got to take a shower right now.
I took the wire brush and the lava soap and already took care of that problem. Thank you.
About three layers of skin cells just gone because you're walking. I mean, can you actually, is the filth actually tangible in the air right now?
Well, the one I heard today blew my mind. I had not realized this. They said, okay, now they've said that Mr. Corker's going to pull his ad, you know, that they're not going to, somebody's going to pull it. No one will admit, I think, that they pulled it. You know what I mean? But somewhere down the line, somebody's saying they pulled it, even though apparently, from what they were saying, no one had any control over this ad. Apparently, it just magically appeared.
Yeah, it was.
I was listening today.
Self-actualizing, sure.
Well, the thing that got to me today was I was listening to Randy and had a caller call in, and I had not noticed this. And I've heard it probably a dozen times. There's another ad that Corker has where he's talking about, you know, it's a voiceover. It says, you know, and he got his money to, you know, comparing him and Ford. And Randy played the ad, and I had never noticed it. When they talk about Corker, you hear this light symphonic music underneath it. When they're talking about Ford, you hear drums. And yeah. It's one of those things, I just never noticed it until I just sat there and listened to it. You know what I mean?
There are times, I mean, I've been taken to task for this, but I swear I'm right, Luke. They play chess, and we play checkers and can't figure out whether or not we can jump the horsey thing.
But, you know, let's see what I send you. How'd you like the one about the ministers?
Oh Lord!
Where all the ministers except for the Baptists are all saying, forget this thing because we of course have the same-sex marriage amendment thing on our vote this time. Of course, they stuck that in to drive the fundies out.
Yeah.
But all the ministers except for the Baptists. I mean, they had like 20. The story I sent you from here, they had like 20 different ministers from different denominations, and were all saying, don't fall for this. And they said, of course, the Southern Baptists aren't here. And I was sitting there going, yeah, they're just waiting for that email from the GOP to tell them what they think.
Well, exactly. Exactly, because they can't, everybody else is saying, don't fall for this. Well, you know, the Baptists already fell.
It's one of those things. I think you said it one day, and I think I've heard Hartman say it before. It's like, you got to wonder when they're going to finally realize that, you know what, they have all three parts of the government, and they still won't try to outlaw abortion. Which makes you think it's sort of like, well, we ain't never going to do it. We don't care who we got because that's the hook. We got you all by.
Well, look what happened in New Jersey today, Luke. You know, the New Jersey Supreme Court gave the New Jersey legislature 180 days in which to craft a civil union law. Yeah. Now, the timing couldn't have been worse.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is going to provide campaign fodder for Tom Kaine's campaign to come out, and the, you know, the fundies will do it. Kaine won't do it himself. It'll be another case. Well, I can't control them. But they'll say, if you reelect Bob Menendez, he'll be, you know, and they'll have babies for lunch on the Senate floor, and gay people will be getting married all over the place, and I'll have to get a divorce because it'll turn me off. That's what's going to happen now.
I know.
It's common sense that the Constitution has to apply to every single American, or it doesn't apply to anyone. That's just common sense. But these fundies can't get it, and the people who are manipulating the fundies do get it and aren't about to do anything about it. These people, you know, on the one hand, the fundies are, oh, I'm sure they're marching in front of the Capitol somewhere in New Jersey tonight. I've forgotten. Trenton, mm-hmm. Right? Protect our families and all of that crap. But at the same time, the people who are behind them are going, thank God the Supreme Court didn't just say gays can't get married. How would we possibly get them out to the polls if it had? This New Jersey court decision was the happiest, the best thing that's come along for New Jersey Republicans in the last year of the campaign season.
Oh, no.
Because now they know that they can get the little weirdos who don't understand diddly about the political process and have never even so much as read the Constitution and don't know the 14th Amendment from, you know.
From the next piece of two-ply.
Right. Exactly.
No, but the one I was getting on to, though, was like our local radio host around here at the quote-unquote independent, who amazingly enough always pulls right behind the conservatives.
Sure.
It's amazing, though, how today, when I listen to him before I go to work here to see what's going on in the world, he was talking about anything but this, about the Ford Corker thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he'd bring up any subject he could. And it's one of those things, it's just amazing, you know, to hear them where they won't bring it up. You know, and if they do, well, we can't talk, you know, directly about it. No, we can't just say that. It's like, you know, it's like you're talking about them. I thought, guys, why don't we do some ads about Mr. Corker and ask, you know, where is he getting all this money that he won't release his tax return? I mean, is it being shipped over in satchels? What? You know, it's like this thing now with, I heard something today where they said that, the pharmaceutical people dropped $500K into Ricky Santorum's little running thing up in Pennsylvania.
Sure they did. Oh, you know? My. Yeah, because they know that there's a, you know, there's a positive. I mean, there's a.
Well, cause, like, say, well,
the pharmaceuticals couldn't care less about partial birth abortion, pre-birth abortion, or the abortions that take place every day in Iraq. Retroactively, they don't care about that. What they care about is whether or not there's going to be enough of a majority in the Senate to keep the Part D prescription drug plan from being reexamined, and to slowing, not stopping, but slowing the mad rush of money that's coming out of that spigot.
It's sort of like, you know, most people don't ever bring it up, and it's one of those facts that just absolutely just lodged in my head, and I just can't get it over it. I remember when they were saying, "Oh, this is going to be 350, 400 million tops for the Part D." I think the last thing I said is somewhere over 2 billion now.
Yeah. And that's because, and the guy, look, the guy who testified in Congress went, I mean, he came out and said, "I perjured myself." You know, I just did.
Yeah.
I was told I wouldn't have a job if I didn't. I mean, that alone is an impeachable offense. You know, all this business, "Oh, we can't think about impeaching him." Yeah, we got to think about him.
Well, you know, it's like the thing, you know, we talked about before about Ronnie Reagan. It's like, you know, I think that's where the Dems first screwed up. In 1986, they had him. You know, they had Iran-Contra. They could have had hearings for 2 years, and they said, "No, we'll just let him go. He's out. You know, he's not going to be running again." It's like, say, they're going to say, and I'm sure we'll hear this after the election. "Well, he's only got less than 2 years. He can't run again. Why impeach him?" It's like, because he broke the law.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know,
it's like saying we need to be beating the war drum. Oh, one quick thing on media thing tonight. I think it's tonight. It may be tomorrow night, but I think it's tonight. Larry King live, that oxymoron. I think
Larry King automatron, yeah. Welcome to the Hall of Presidents.
No, they look more lifelike. Sorry. I see them. Now, I think tonight is the Dixie Chicks are on.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
Yeah. So, oh, how did you like the Hightower?
Oh, I always liked Jim Hightower. He's a, you know.
The hell with red and blue. People want out of Iraq and solution now.
Yeah, just stop with the stupid.
quit dancing and let's just start marching, you know? We're all sitting around here playing musical chairs. Like, no, 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 no.
Well, and, you know, that was also manifested in that story that started out, what was it, from the New York Times about the old guy, the old white redneck guy with the long white beard who said, what was the quote? I can't consider race in this election.
Oh.
You're talking about Corker versus Ford. I can't consider race in this election. I got to send the right feller to Washington. Now, mind you, I don't want my daughter marrying one of them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was sort of like, were we talking to the same person? It's like, you know, it's like, but like I say, you know, most people up north don't understand, you know, that that's the way people down south are. I'm sorry, but that's where they are.
A lot of work to be done.
But, what was the other thing? Shoot, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You were talking religion a minute ago. Best question to ask, you really want to get a fight going? Just go up to one of these guys and go, what color was Jesus?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, like I say, when I was about 16, that's when I left the Southern Baptist. That's when I was raised. I'd already known that was a crock, but...
Oh, well, see, I've had it happen on the air. Back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, people would call and say, why do you always have to refer to him as the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter? He's just my Lord and Savior. Why do you have to call him brown?
You know, because I was wondering, you know, why in all these pictures does he look like he's never been out in the sun? You know?
Well, I mean, there's actually a legitimate reason for that. It's because those representations are based on previous Greek representations of Apollo.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. It's one of those things when you see these you see the plates, you know, the pictures, you know, and you're just always like wondering, you know, the artist, you know, even though you knew that's where they took it from, you have to think some of them are going, this ain't right. You know, Michelangelo had to go, no, this isn't right. I understand pigments. This isn't it. You know? Because like I say, he was there, I think it was in Milan or whatever, so he had to see people from other countries sailing in and out. So he had to know. People down there aren't really lily white when I see, you know.
Oh, with that, we go to the news, Luke.
Right.
Thanks so much, man. Have a great evening.
Bye.
Bye now. Yeah, I'm going to vote for that Harold Ford. I don't want him marrying my daughter or nothing, but I'm going to vote for it. A lot of work to do. A lot of work to do. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Good away, and who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down. Let's go down. Come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down. Down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way.
This is the Quality News Network. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki condemned today's raid by U.S. and Iraqi forces on Sadr City, which left at least four people dead. Sadr City is a Shiite militia stronghold led by anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, who provides political support for al-Maliki. Al-Maliki also told reporters that no one should be allowed to impose a timetable on his government. That was in response to comments made yesterday by U.S. General George Casey, who said he thought Iraqi forces would be ready to take over security there in 12 to 18 months. At a news conference today, President Bush conceded that he's aware many Americans are not satisfied with the situation in Iraq and said he's not satisfied either. Mr. Bush also acknowledged that 93 American service members have died in Iraq this month, a departure from his previous policy of not discussing American deaths. In New Jersey today, the Supreme Court ruled that gay couples have the same rights as heterosexual couples. Lawmakers now have 6 months to either legalize the unions or create a new system of civil unions. In Miami, another former altar boy has stepped forward in the Mark Foley scandal. He says he was molested in the 1970s by the same priest that Foley says sexually abused him as a teenager. The man says he plans to sue the Archdiocese of Miami. In North Korea today, officials warned South Korea against joining international sanctions over its nuclear test, saying the North would view it as a confrontation. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is urging South Korea to implement the sanctions. In Iran, a semi-official news agency reports that officials are working on a second batch of centrifuges related to its nuclear program. However, experts say Iran is still years away from actually producing a nuclear weapon. Iran maintains its program is for peaceful purposes only. Meanwhile, world powers are trying to reach a consensus about sanctions against Iran for its refusal to stop enriching uranium. Today, a draft resolution was delivered to Russian and Chinese diplomats for their review. In New Mexico, police have discovered possibly classified information from the Los Alamos National Laboratory. CNN reports that a computer disk that contained the information was discovered during a raid on a meth lab. The FBI is investigating. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A new study finds that California's most polluted beaches can be found in Los Angeles County, and the worst offender among those cities is Long Beach. The Fed met for the second time today and decided to leave the key interest rate unchanged at 5.25%. Sales of existing homes have fallen for the 6th month in a row. The National Association of Realtors reports that they dropped by 1.9% in September. Also, the median price of a single-family home fell to just under $220,000. Financier Carl Icahn has been named the new chairman of biotech drug maker ImClone. The company also reported its third-quarter earnings were up 85%. Toyota is reportedly moving production of the Tundra to a new plant in Texas. The revamped Tundra will compete with the Chevy Silverado, Dodge Ram, and Ford F-Series pickup. General Motors reported a smaller than expected third-quarter loss of $115 million and says that reflects its successful turnaround plan. Chrysler lost nearly $1.5 billion in the third quarter. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $61.72. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow had another record close. The Dow was up 7 points at 12,135. NASDAQ up 12 points at 2357. S&P 500 up 5 points at 1382. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two is underway. I'm Bob. A couple of parcels in the email box, bob@headonradio.com. Our good friend Jim from California writes in saying the religious lunatics are still at it. He said, I had a thought the other day, but then I dismissed it as too bizarre. It occurred to me that I had been hearing rumors my whole life that some very charismatic individual would come to prominence one day and lead to the end of the world. This person has been referred to by many names, depending on the religious cult involved, but generally referred to as the Antichrist. It occurred to me that Barack Obama is so charismatic that some of the religious loonies would think he was this Antichrist. I dismissed the thought, hoping that not even the religious morons of the USA could come up with some weird theory like that, but then unfortunately this morning I found I was wrong. Some of the religious right are already speculating that Obama is the Antichrist. Oh no. It took the ignorant mentality of the illiterate masses of the USA to come up with the form of Protestantism that is prevalent in this country to begin with. As I have said before, a bunch of ignorant people interpreting an ancient book that was not written to them in the first place and interpreting it to be for them has caused the mass hysteria of the end times religious right insanity. And since the religious right think that Democrats and all liberals are demon-possessed anyway... Oh, sorry, that was my demon. It only figures that if somebody popular arose among the progressive wing of politics, they would be of the devil. Never mind that some of the most deviant beliefs of all times come from these same narrow-minded religious fools. I can just imagine what the Falwells and Robertsons will do with this in the future. Remember how they thought the Pope would be ruling the USA from the Vatican when Kennedy was running? I've read about that. I wasn't quite one then. I wasn't quite then. Now they have a popular, intelligent, well-spoken, half-African-American to lay labels on. It would be funny if it wasn't so dangerous and so diabolically evil. They do evil. Thanks, Jim. They do evil very, very well, as a matter of fact. And this from our good friend Billy Shears. Rush claims Fox was acting. And he says, Rush is delusional. Michael J. Fox was acting when he was portraying the character Alex P. Keaton, who adored Ronald Reagan. Not acting, delivering his message in the TV spot. You know, in many ways, that's probably what Rush is mad about. Because, you know, a lot of these right-wingers can't tell the difference between TV and reality. That's probably accounts for the rise of so-called reality TV. Thanks, Billy. All right, then, to the phone. Sarge is calling in from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. I was going to try and avoid calling in, but something was said that I just couldn't pass up, and it was the statement about the religious people getting all huffy-puffy about things. And, you know, if you believe in that book called the Bible, and I don't, but if you do, then there's one thing that keeps popping through my mind, and it is the fact that it was the religious leaders of the faith that demanded Jesus be crucified. The Romans tried to avoid it. The religious, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, they were the ones that had to have it happen. And that, you know, that is
yeah,
where...
if in fact the accounts in the Gospels are true.
Right.
You know, the whole, you know, given the timing of it all, I personally think I know that by the time they got around to writing the Gospels, the rift between Judaism and what was beginning to be called the Way were already apparent and full-blown. And so it would be convenient to put a line in there with the religious leaders saying, then let it be on our heads and on the heads of our children. That's very convenient.
Yeah.
That argument is there to be made, Sarge. The fact of the matter is, this is what happens to anybody who kicks, who swims against the current or kicks against the grain.
You know, the one thing that has appalled me since I was a child, growing up in the Southern Baptist Church, is the focus seems to be so little on the really, really fine teachings that are in the Bible, like Matthew 25, for instance.
Sure.
And the song, I don't know if you remember this song, it was by Three Dog Night called Easy to Be Hard.
Yeah.
And that song just kept running through my mind yesterday, and as I explored the travesty, what is Jackson County. And then last night, Freckles was in the chat, and she made one of the most beautiful gestures that I've seen in the time I've been dealing with this. And, you know, I looked at that and I said, well, you know, that young lady has more maturity and more wherewithal than so many grown adults, because that woman in the bank that I talked to before Ray and I left yesterday, She claims to be a Christian. She claims to care about people. And yet when I wanted to tell her the horrors that I was expecting to encounter, she didn't want to hear it.
No. People are up to their necks in it. I mean, to a certain extent, this is simple human nature, Sarge. You know, they're looking at it, they're hearing about it, they're living with it, and if you make an extra special point to remind them of it, and you know, and because there's an implied indictment or an implied challenge to talking about it, and that is the fact, you know, especially where you are, and that is, it is this way. Why are you still tolerating it being this way?
That's right. And you know, I mean, before I left, I knew pretty much what I was going to see. I mean, I already had a pretty horrible picture in my mind, but when Ray and I got down there and I saw what we were facing and saw the paranoia and I saw the control mechanisms that are in place down there to prevent these people from having almost any control of their lives.
Well, if they did, you know, getting that control mechanism in place was more important than getting the power back on when you get right down to it, if you're talking about the Bush administration, because you cannot have people down in the middle of the Bible Belt suddenly empowering themselves, standing up on their own hind legs and demanding that they be treated like human beings, and beyond that, being treated like full participant citizens in this republic. If you do that, everything starts coming unglued, and the center, as the old poem says, will not hold.
Well, you know, one of the women we talked to, she told me she had lung cancer, and she's a widow. And the more I talked to her, I mean, after every sentence, she would break down in tears. And I asked her, well, how is this affecting your lung cancer? And she said, it's just increased it. And I know it's just made it even worse than it was before. And the ungodliness of what is going on. And then the day before, I had talked to a Homeland Security guy, and he denied the very existence of what I already knew was a fact. And yet, when we were talking about people needing help, the one thing that I heard that really distressed me about leadership was they said, well, the federal government's not doing their part, but Haley Barbour's trying his hardest, but the federal government just won't let him do it. And I know for a fact that Haley Barbour's involved in it up to his neck. He is just as bad as they are.
Look, there are people, Sarge, who are going to get criminally wealthy off of the agony of the people who suffered through Katrina. You know, this level of patronage is a way of life in the Republican Party.
I just, you know, I wish, I mean, I'm going to be honest about this, as I can sit here and I can describe to you the horrors, I can tell you the stories, Ray can get on, he can tell you the stories, Darrera can get on and tell you the stories, but until you actually go down there and speak to the regular people, you go to the egg sites, you go and just talk to the people, there is no way you can comprehend the horrors that is Jackson County and the leadership, the distress in these people are just so ungodly. Well, you know, you and I talked this morning, and I was just almost to the point where I was about ready to just...
Yeah, and you're not living in it every day.
No, I mean, I'm close by, but I'm not in it, you know. And, I hear people say, well, why in the world don't they leave? They can't leave. There is no money for them.
And see,
what
that's...
little bit they have has been taken away, and what little bit they're getting, they're having to accept on conditions that they have to follow the rules.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And see, that's the I'm not trying to draw a comparison between the two things, but I've heard the same thing said up here. People who object to having their entire geographic area blown up by Don Blankenship because Blankenship hasn't figured out that they don't attach U-Hauls to hearses yet. You know, they protest against mountaintop removal, and the insensitive son of a guns who don't live near it will say, well, why don't I just move away?
Yeah. I mean,
well, you know what? Why do you have to move away? If your people have been living on ground for 300 daggum years, why should some coal company force you out? Or if you've been living on that Gulf Coast for 200, 300 years, because people have been, that's a very old, you know, we all
well,
know.
My own family founded South Mississippi, you know, that back
yeah, so why,
in
the 1790s. You know, why should people have to leave? Why should they leave? Why, you know, so that somebody else can come in and take advantage of their tragedy.
Yes, and then when you look and you see the misplaced priorities, and then when you try to call as many people as I've called, I have talked to senators, I've talked to representatives, I've talked to news media, I've talked to everybody that I could think of to talk to, and so far the only one that really seems to want to grab a hold of this thing is John Conyers. I didn't hear from him today, but I did call his office, and we're going to get together. It's just a matter of getting the schedule together. But that is the only person. And I've talked to Trent Lott. I've talked to Thad Cochran. I've talked to Gene Taylor. I've talked to everybody's office. And out of all of them, Nancy Pelosi's, out of all of them, the only one that has said, we got to talk to you. Is John Conyers' office. And that scares me to death, because if you don't think that this police state that is Jackson County, Mississippi, cannot spread to your area, you better stop and think again. These people really brought home to me what it must have been like back in the 30s when Hitler was becoming at the height of his power.
Yeah.
Because I know.
Yeah, before the.
Yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Germany before the ovens got hot.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, Bob. I just wanted to check in.
All right, Sarge. You take care. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And onward to our good friend Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening. How are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
Oh, reasonably. I just want to make one quick comment about Rush Limbaugh and his portrayal of Michael J. Fox.
Okay.
I'm glad he did it. Because it really proves what an asshole he really is.
Well, yeah, there's truth in that. It's when the mask comes off and you see these so-called compassionate conservatives for what they are, there's value to it.
Well, there's nothing compassionate about Rush Limbaugh, and he'll be the first to tell you that. Let me just look at the guy. But I saw the clip from Don Imus this morning, and he has incurred the ire of the I Man, and I can guarantee you one thing, that's not going to be good for him. But, it, you know, each time these people do something like that, it's grist for my mill. I love it. Because it shows people what they really are. The mask has come off, and, you know, it's right here before the election, and maybe a lot of people who think that Rush Limbaugh is entertainment might change their mind.
Well, you know, it's a very good point, Jim, and our good friend Richard, who writes over at Richard Mathis, who writes over at Op-Ed News, went through and found a bunch of Rush quotes. And, you know, maybe this is the time that we finally go back and we re-examine what a monster this freak is. Let's see. Here's some of the things. He once said this, Jim, one of the things I want to do before I die is conduct the homeless Olympics, the 10-meter shopping cart relay, the dumpster dig, and the hop, skip, and trip.
Gosh, what a sense of humor.
Yeah, he's hilarious, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Let's see. If you're working to make the playing field fair and level, you're working for the wrong reasons. Work to take the opportunities that arise and use your individual talents to excel at those opportunities. And I mean, this list just, I told Richard when he sent it to me that this is something I'm going to hang on to, because this is stuff that's worth remembering. To a black caller, he once said, Jim, take that bone out of your nose and call me back.
Well, you know, he's having his brief gaudy hour, and, you know, I hope he enjoys it.
I wish the hour was a little more brief. It's been going on for 20 years now, Jim.
Like I said to you and some of your callers who are impatient, the mills of the gods grind slowly, they do grind exceedingly fine. And I can remember my parents say when Walter Winchell was the thing that everybody listened to, and when Walter Winchell died, do you know who attended his funeral?
Well, one person, wasn't it? His daughter,
right,
or something?
His daughter.
Yep, I know.
So the day will come when no one will be wearing Rush anymore.
I love that analogy, Jim. That you took me aback for a second.
Well,
no one's wearing Rush this year.
That's right. I stopped wearing Rush years ago. I never did like Rush Limbaugh anyway. But what I'm saying is, basically, this man is going to self-destruct. I look at him.
Well, you know, I think eventually the addiction will get to him and he'll overdose.
Well, I mean, it could be. I'm not predicting anything for him, or he's going to step in something that doesn't smell too good for too long. I mean, people like that generally do, a pattern of repetitive behavior. And, and then they were talking about Michael J. Fox, and I think they said the medication contributed to those asymmetrical gestures.
Exactly. That wasn't him off his medicine. That was him on his medicine.
Right. And I understand that the physicians or several Parkinsonian specialists said that this medication might contribute to that. And I wasn't quite clear on that.
It does, because it modifies, you know, this is all about, if I understand it or can paraphrase it remotely correctly, it's about misfiring in the brain.
Precisely.
And instead of being utterly uncontrolled shaking and so forth, like the dementia pugilistica that Muhammad Ali suffers from, when you take the medicine, you still get the movements, but they are not as asymmetrical as the, and they're not as profound as what they would be without it, and so you can still, to some degree or another, function.
Well, in other words, this most recent TV appearance that he made doing this, this was made, I guess, to show how he had, how his condition had degenerated, I guess.
Well, I don't think it was deliberately done, because this is a function of a foundation that Michael J. Fox founded and heads. This wasn't done to show people how bad off Michael J. Fox is, Jim, so much as I think it was a profound and honest statement by Michael J. Fox, because he's not just done it on behalf of Claire McCaskill in Missouri. He's done it for Cardin in Maryland as well, because these right wing people that are running for office. Michael J. Fox understands that he's not going to get better. This isn't something you live with, and then this is a killer, and it's going to kill him, and he's come to terms with it. But he is thinking in terms of other people. And so when he says that it means something to him to know that Jim Talent tried to criminalize the process that might lead to a cure, he's talking about generations of people who could be helped that Jim Talent is standing in the way of.
You're referring to stem cells and things like this?
Yeah. I mean, that's specifically what these ads are about.
Well, Christopher Reed did the same thing before he passed on.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically to see these very vital, contributing people have to deteriorate before your very eyes. It's heartrending. And if anyone cannot be moved by that, then they have no heart and no pity whatsoever, and nor should any pity ever be shown to them. And that's all I got to say about that.
Well, I like the last part of it best, Jim. Nor should any pity be shown to them. But, you know, the whole world, you know, the media world and so forth, oh, poor Rush Limbaugh, he's addicted to painkillers because he's got a bad back. And he's, you know, he's got hearing loss and they got to get it, blah, 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 blah. And I was sitting there saying, mm-mm, no. You know, quarter is offered to those who have offered quarter themselves.
Well, to men like Rush Limbaugh, I don't offer any quarter.
Nor should you. Nor should you, Jim.
Okay.
Thank you very kindly.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. We'll keep going with the phone calls, but I want to share a little bit more, because I really appreciate what our friend Richard did in digging this stuff up. These are the pearls of wisdom from a man who calls himself Americans America's truth detector. All right? And if you and see, he's a sleazy little coward, and he always has been. And because, you know, if you call him on it, oh, I just do it for entertainment purposes, my friends. This is an entertainment show, not a political show. Horse pucky. One of these days, I'm going to get so fed up, I'm going to use the real words, but not now. No, let's see. I'll even do my rush for you. My friends, if we are going to start rewarding no skills and stupid people, I'm serious. Let the unskilled jobs that take absolutely no knowledge whatsoever to do, let the stupid and unskilled Mexicans do that work. That's one. I think this reason why girls don't do well on multiple choice tests goes all the way back to the Bible, all the way back to Genesis. Adam and Eve, God said, all right, Eve, multiple choice or multiple orgasms. What's it gonna be? We all know what was chosen. The feminist movement was created to allow ugly women access to the mainstream of society. Some of these babes, I'm telling you, like the sexual harassment crowd, they're out there protesting what they actually wish would happen to them sometimes. No, Agnes, no. Don't, no, 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 honey, no, that's not, no, that Rush said that. Okay, to the phones, our good friend Lee is calling from North Carolina. Hey, Lee, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing? I didn't expect to be on this this soon.
Well, that's okay. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me. Hey, I understand that Joe Biden has said that there were several Republican senators that said that right after the election they're going to come out against the war.
Yeah, I think I ran across that, yeah.
What is wrong with these people? Don't they understand that every American soldier that dies between the time that they had their, you know, immaculate, reception, that there was something wrong, and the time that they come out, every single one of the of American soldiers that dies is directly blood on their hands. And how can you say that?
Yeah, exactly. They are directly responsible because, you know, when you've had your road to Damascus moment, you don't wait till you get to Damascus to tell people about it. You start talking at the minute. But this is a lie, Lee. This is a lie. Joe Biden's a DLC Democrat who wants to go along and get along, and he thinks that he's actually got friends who are Republicans. These guys aren't going to change their stripes. They're not going to come out after the election and say that we need a different strategy in Iraq. These people are trying to save their stinking hides in the Senate. That's all there is to it, and Joe Biden is a fool to believe them.
But even if they're telling the truth, they're saying we know it's wrong, but we're going to wait until it's politically suitable, it's politically correct, or good for them. So every person between the time that they decided, or they found out, or they basically had this awakening. Every single American death, every single Iraqi death, between the time that they found out the truth and they came out and told the truth, every single one of those is blood on their hands.
Exclusively on their hands. You're right.
I don't know. I went to vote today in North Carolina.
Early voting?
Yeah. And it is terrible. They have these very complicated machines that someone has to take you up to, and they punch in a number. And this little old lady takes me up, and I suppose she had to put in the precinct and all these little numbers that she had to put in because I was early voting and not at the precinct. But then she had to put in another number that was like 9 digits. And she, this is this little old lady could punch in any kind of code.
Yeah.
She doesn't know, you know, and it's not her fault. But she's there and she can't see as well as I can. And this is early voting. There was only about 3 people in front of me. And it took me 35, 40 minutes to get in there and get out.
Yeah, but Lee, you took the 35 or 40 minutes to get in and get out. When other people who have been through that process go home and tell their neighbors, guess what happens?
Yeah, but guess what happens when the line is not just 3 people long, when it's 30 people long,
right?
50 people long, when it's 100 people long? There's going to be a lot more that turn around.
Well, exactly.
This is terrible. I mean, how can you call it progress when what you're doing takes longer, is more complicated, and more prone to a mistake than what you had? Just give me a paper ballot. Come on, give it to me. Don't even print the guy's name on it. Let me write the name. And I could have been out of there in 5 minutes.
Yeah, write the name, make a check mark, make an X, what the heck ever, drop it in the little can with the slit and the lock on it, and walk away. But you got to understand, that's not what this administration wants, Lee. And you know that as well as I do. It is a long established political. I mean, it's like on the level of a law of nature. Low voter turnout favors Republicans every time.
It may not this year. I don't know. I'm hoping, but it may not this year. But I saw CNN last night. The Joe Scarborough show gave the Republican Party, I mean, they're doing their work for them.
Mm-hmm.
On Joe Scarborough, they gave him their racist and sexist political ad. Joe Scarborough show last night had this segment and, it was called What Will the Congress Look Like If the Democrats Take Over? They put up pictures basically of who's the guy? Barney Frank.
Yeah. Nancy Pelosi.
Nancy Pelosi.
John Conyers.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And
Elsie Hastings, and basically they put the pictures up, and Scarborough was actually saying negative things about him as they put the pictures up. And what they were saying is, look, if you vote for the Democrats, you're going to have a gay person, 3 black people, and a woman in charge of Congress.
Oh,
that's what they were saying.
Yeah, and the implications are clear. They will be barbecuing late term aborted babies on the floor of the House and Senate. I mean, they may as well come out and say it, because that is the full focus and intent of all of their sleazy, filthy advertising. But you know, you can't.
They also said about Charles Dingell that he didn't say that he's going to pull the troops out of Iraq, said that he's going to limit or take away the money for the troops in Iraq. They also said about the guy from Detroit that's going to be the head of the armed service, not the armed service committee, but the judiciary committee, that
yeah, that's Conyers.
Conyers. That he has a whole list already waiting to put up there to impeach George Bush. You know, they said about Elsie Hastings that he had some indictment and stuff.
Well, oh yeah, no, Elsie Hastings. They can't say Elsie Hastings without saying, you know, he was impeached and removed from the federal bench.
Yeah.
They never mentioned that it was by a gang of Republicans who did it.
That's right. Well, no, they said that Democrats did it.
Well, maybe it was.
They actually said that Democrats did it. But the thing is, it was not news. It was a Republican propaganda commercial.
Sure, and you know, but all of this stuff.
And then they flashed it at the end of it. They flashed these faces. They flashed a gay person. They didn't flash the three black people. They flashed the gay person. They flashed two black people, and they flashed a woman. And they said, "Gays, blacks, and women." You know, that's what they were saying. That's what they were trying to put into your psyche. If you vote Democratic, it's going to be gays, blacks, and women are going to be in control.
And think about it, Lee. There's a reason for that. That's because this nation is racist, sexist, and bigoted, homophobically bigoted. They are playing to their absolute base. And you can understand why they're doing this stuff, Lee, because it's all they've got. They've screwed up the economy. They have screwed the middle class. They have screwed up the war. They have screwed up our general overall standing in the world. They have made us less secure today than we were the day before George Bush took office. They haven't done anything right. And they've you know, they talk about the Democrats have no ideas. They don't put forward any solutions. You know what? The Republican Party hasn't had an idea since Lincoln, for the love
of
God.
I was going to say since Lincoln, yes.
You know, and they even had to co-opt that one from the abolitionist movement.
And you know they did. They don't even like Lincoln's idea. Lincoln's idea was to free the slaves. They don't even like that.
No, we're going back. No, George has told us, you know, we're going back to an ownership society. If there's any comfort in it, it's not just going to be African Americans who get to be slaves. You know, my white butt gets to be a slave this time through, too, because they are seeking. Yeah, and you know, this is mathematically provable by looking at the numbers on the middle class. This is provable by what's happening to the middle class. We are going to have a two-class society of extremely rich and extremely poor and nothing in the middle. If they are allowed to continue in the same way.
Well, we can't allow them to continue. We just cannot allow it. But you warned us that it was going to be bad, that it was going to be sleazy. But my goodness, I mean, how sleazy can these people get?
Don't ask. I mean, we got a week and a half to go, Lee, and it's going to keep getting uglier. You know, at this point, we are halfway through the cesspool, and we are up to our necks in liquid caca, thanks to the Republican National Committee. It is as filthy to continue on as it is to turn around and go back. We got to get the job done. We got to get to the other side. We got to get out and get cleaned up and start doing the business of the country. You know, I'm seeing a lot of reporting out that says that voter turnout is going to be low, and if it is low, the Republicans have much less to worry about.
I don't know. I've done early voting before, and I've seen more people I saw more people at early voting today. I don't know what that portends, but I did see there were people in front of me, there were people behind me. When I've done early voting before, I was pretty much me and, you know, myself, and maybe one person in front, one person behind.
Mm-hmm. So well, if people...
Hopefully that's a good sign.
Well, we owe it to ourselves if we want to see this change come about, Lee. We absolutely must... talk to our friends, talk to our neighbors, and you know, if you want to take the tactic of being apolitical about it, you know, tell them please go vote,
just go vote. But another thing, I am really sick and tired of seeing these pundits on TV that are obviously young, listening to these people that call up on the radio shows. That are obviously young, and they're against this war. And I'm wondering, why doesn't any talk show host, yourself included, just ask a person when they call up, how old are you? And if you're a conservative, a neocon that is for this war, why in the hell are you here? Why aren't you in Iraq?
Well, exactly.
And there's only two. There are two answers that are valid. I'm sorry. Every other answer is just an excuse and a lie. the first answer that is valid is that I am mentally or physically incapable of going. The second answer is I'm a coward. That's it. If you're for this war and you're, say, these guys that call themselves, you know, in college, the young Republicans, if you're for this war and you're a young Republican in college, then and you're not trying to get into the military, you're a coward. You're a coward, and you have no right at all, to say we should stay there unless you're showing that we should stay there by putting your body in the way.
If you are of age and you can go and you believe in this war, it's, yeah, they must go. They must, you know, because otherwise, you're absolutely right, Lee. You don't get to walk around and tell poor kids from the inner city or poor kids from the farm or poor kids from the barrio that we need to stay the course.
There it is. And why don't the Democrats really, there's a simple commercial that you can put up that would be generic and wouldn't cost a lot of money because it would be generic. You just put up commercials of George Bush telling his lies. Just put it up, telling his lies.
Yeah.
This last one is the absolute worst, that he did not. He's not for stay the course.
Yeah, never said it.
He said never said it.
But the thing is, it extends beyond George Bush, Lee. The New York Times is carrying water again. I don't know. Maybe Judith Miller is secretly back at work. But there was a New York Times piece a couple of days ago where the writers said, Joe Lieberman said he never said stay the course, and we were not able to find any instance of him ever saying stay the course. Well, the next couple of days they had to run a retraction and say, yeah, we found it here and here and here and here and here, something like seven times.
Well, Tony Snow said they found George Bush saying stay the course only seven or eight times. Now, forgive me.
Well, clearly that's never.
But that even if they only found him saying it one time, that means he lied.
Yes.
That means he lied.
I mean,
the seventh time. But actually, I can find it dozens and dozens of times.
Sure. It's all there. It's available. And, you know, you talk about simple commercials. Here's a simple commercial. You start out with, I'm sorry, Bill Clinton saying, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. And then you cut to George Bush saying, we've never been stay the course.
We've never been stay the course.
And then where Bill told
all of his other lies.
Yeah, he told that lie. You know, Bill told that lie once.
Mm-hmm.
George Bush has told the stay the course lie, as you noted, a dozen times if he said it once. It's a simple enough commercial to run.
Simple. And
But Lee, you only run it if you actually want to fight these bastards back and you want to win.
And oh man, just I can't even think of, you know, all the other lies that they could put up. You know, if the Valerie Plame thing, if it came out of my office, we're gonna fire him. We want to smoke Osama bin Laden out, and he's, you know, as they say in Texas or whatever. And then he says, I don't know where he is, and I don't care. Just lie upon lie upon lie. And after you show those shots of him lying and lying and lying, you show him putting his arm around somebody and saying, somebody like Danny Hastert, he's a good man. Now, you put that little thing in people's minds after you've shown all the other lies, and he says, Danny Hastert's a good man, and you put you put it in people's mind that this must be a lie, too.
Sure. Or, you know, heck of a job, Brownie.
Yeah. I mean, just lie upon lie upon lie upon lie.
Yeah, look, it's 5.5 years of lies at this point, Lee. I mean, if the Democrats were really serious about busting George Bush, the only problem they would have is in deciding which lies to highlight, because it's all lies.
There are so many lies, and
Scared, Lee. We're scared, man.
John Kerry's, you know. Biggest moment I thought was when he was caught on. He was caught by the mic. The mic was supposed to be off, and he said something like, "I'm not exactly sure."
Biggest bunch of liars I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely. And John Kerry made excuses for that.
Oh yeah, he backed off.
He said, "I meant that because they are. They're the biggest bunch of liars I've ever seen in my life." If he had run on that. And if he had run on that and even lost, you know, if he had run on that and even lost, he could at least say, "Now I told you so."
Exactly.
But he backed up from what he knew to be the truth.
Well, you know, that goes to my thesis, Lee. That goes to my argument. You only do this stuff if you want to fight hard enough to win. If you actually care about the American people enough to run these thugs, these punks, these monsters, these killers, these rapists, if you want to run them out, then you fight.
You gotta fight.
But you know, as long as the Democratic Party is controlled by the likes of Bob Schrum, you know, because that man still has a lot of power. You know, we can't fight back. We have to just let them screw themselves. Okay. You know, no, that's not all right.
I still believe that even if the Democrats take control of both the House and the Senate, they are going to say, we can't start impeachment because guess what? We have an election.
All the elections, less than 2 years away. We can't do that now.
That's ridiculous because we have an election every 2 years. That means you can never do anything.
You know, sometimes, you know, this is the thing that leads me to think about third-party politics, but, you know, I know better. But sometimes I really want a bunch of idealists, just one election cycle, and I'm just indulging myself right now, Lee. I'd like to see people stand up and say, look, we are going to go, and I want you to send me there because we got work to do, we got business to do, we got a nation to save, we got a future to protect, and you know what? If you throw me out 2 years later, that's fine by me, but I'm going to bust my ass for the 2 years I'm there, and I'm not going to waste any time having dinner with any lobbyists. I'm not going to waste my time. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to work. I'm going to work full time. I will work around the clock. I will be on the people's business constantly.
Absolutely. And you know, this thing about, well, we have, you know, there's a presidential election coming up in 2 years. I don't care. I don't, you know, at this point, I do not care. If there's a Republican that is elected in 2008 or not, if you do your job as Congress, it will not care. It won't matter, period, because you will have sent a message. You know, you will have sent a message that you can't keep doing this. If you indict George Bush and you get rid of George Bush and you indict all of his people and you send them to prison, even if there is a Republican that gains the presidency in 2008, he will have been sent a message.
Yeah.
And he won't do this stuff anymore. And maybe we'll have a good Republican, because not all Republicans are bad. You know, Republican ideas are not bad. We can agree to disagree, as long as you agree to have a dialogue. These Nazis that we have right now don't even agree to have a dialogue.
No. Well, they can't have a dialogue. Again, they got nothing. You know, we say, well, you know, we need to talk about the shrinking middle class, and they scream, gay marriage. And we say, well, you know, we need to work towards shoring up Social Security, and they scream, immigration. And, you know, you can't carry on a dialogue with someone who's psychotic or evil. You know, you go back. You go back to those senators who were waiting until after the election. I've made a little mantra out of repeating this once in a while, and I know it's simple and perhaps overly simple, Lee, but I really, really believe it. If you would not be evil, when you realize you are doing evil, you must immediately cease doing evil.
Absolutely.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, if there are a dozen Republican senators who, if they get to keep their seats, will change their tune on the day after the election, they are evil now, and when they change their tune, they will still be evil. Because in that space of time, what will it be? 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 dead Americans? God knows how many dead Iraqis?
And it is totally on their hands. And they, you know, they have no excuse then. I mean, this is totally on their hands. If they have told Joe Biden or anybody else that I'm against this war, but we got to wait till after the election. Well, buddy, from the moment that you found out that you're against this war to when you come out after the election, every single American death is on your hands. Everyone.
Every last one.
Single one.
I agree wholeheartedly. You remind me of something, and I wanted to bring it up because a lot of what you talk about, Lee, refers to the absence, the absolute, you know, deep space level of vacuum that we have when it comes to leadership. And this today is the fourth anniversary of a really, really sorry day in American history. This is the day that the plane crashed, and the greatest progressive in either house of Congress was killed.
Yeah.
This is the fourth anniversary of the death of Paul Wellstone.
Right.
And the more I consider it, with each passing day of this Bush administration, the more I am beginning to put the death of Paul Wellstone in the same category as the murder of John Kennedy, because it had absolute world-changing effects that I don't think anybody could contemplate when it actually happened. Do you think for one instant that Paul Wellstone would have sat idly by while a fool like George Bush says things like, stay the course? Do you think, what would Paul Wellstone have said about the likes of Samuel Alito? What would Paul Wellstone have done with Joe Biden's bankruptcy bill?
The bankruptcy bill is a blight on the Democratic Party.
What would Paul Wellstone have done when Katrina hit? I'll tell you what Paul Wellstone would have done. Paul Wellstone would have been on the Gulf Coast, and he would have been up to his neck in those swirling waters trying to save lives himself.
And it is absolutely it's a blight on America. That in America, we still have people on the Gulf Coast that are hurting. Man, when the tsunami hit, those people, they may not be back to their previous lives, but they're on the way back to their previous lives. Our government did absolutely nothing. But say we're going to do something, and that's what the Bush administration does all the time. They say one thing, and then they do nothing, and they
forget
about it.
Yeah, Lee, or they do something, and the something that they do is manifestly evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one of these days we might get around to investigating the response to Katrina. Really investigating it. I don't mean some panel chaired by Joe Lieberman and Susan Collins. I mean really investigate it.
Has anybody asked about the Dubai torts thing that these people say? We're gonna make Dubai sell the ports. They haven't done it yet. They depended on exactly what they depend on all the time. Americans have a very short attention span. Dubai has not sold those ports. They don't have. And they don't intend on selling those ports. Nobody remembers it anymore. Dubai still owns those ports.
Yep.
And nobody's saying anything because, you know what? We forgot. We forgot.
We are inundated, Lee. We are inundated. I don't think we forgot. We just got moved on because it's one horror after another. This is like one of those Guinness Book of World Records domino setups where they just and they just fall and fall, and it's another domino and another domino and another domino, another horror, another horror, another horror, and we are absolutely swamped in it. That's what I was talking about the cesspool, man. We are up to our necks. And if we don't get toward the other side, we're going to get drowned in this filth.
But Bob, the next time that you get a caller on your show that is a neocon, my goodness, I mean, please ask this person how old he is.
I will.
And if he's of military age, ask him why he's not in the military. And you know, when I was in the military age was from 18 to 26. You know, you could be drafted from age 18 to 26.
Right.
Now, it's like they've extended it to, well, not the draft, but the age you can be in the military, till about 46. So you've got Joe Scarborough may be eligible to go over there. Why the hell ain't he there? You know, why the hell aren't you there? Why are you on TV talking about we should be there?
Lindsey Graham
should be there.
Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina is still a commissioned officer in the United States Air Force. Why has he, if he supports it, man, why is he not there? You know, Winston Churchill was thrown out of power during the First World War, and when he lost his position, he packed up bag and baggage, and by God, he went to the trenches.
He was a patriot.
That is what a man does.
He was a patriot. And you know, when I say patriot, I have to think that all these people that they are calling insurgents, they're patriots. They're patriots.
In their own country, yes.
Absolutely. They are patriots. You can come down on me if you want to. You can call me a terrorist lover or whatever, but those people are not terrorists. They're patriots.
They are fighting for their own families. They are fighting for their own people. When little seven-year-old girls are covered in the blood of their mother and father because they have been shot in an automobile by American troops, how are you going to declare someone a terrorist who is fighting back against the people who killed that child's parents?
You can't. And you know what? Just the same as you cannot.
But we're dealing with Republicans, okay, Lee, and they don't have the first daggum clue of the meaning of patriotism. If this nation was physically attacked by people with guns and bombs, they would be the first ones to be out collaborating with the other side.
You know what? They'd be the first ones out collaborating. I'm just saying that as a patriot, I would be the first one out
fighting back.
A roadside bomb.
Yeah.
Knifing or whatever. And I would be to every camera that's put up to my face, I would say, well, you know, the Chinese are doing good here or whatever. And as soon as the camera's off, I'd be plotting to kill the Chinese.
Yeah, exactly. That's what patriotism means. Hey, Lee, we're up against it. Thanks so much for everything you bring. Man, I dig these conversations.
I dig them too. My computer was down. I couldn't listen to you. But I got my little shot tonight. Deuce to Agnes. So.
All right. Thank you, Lee. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And if you're on hold, please stay that way. We'll come to you out of the top of the hour news. Jump right in, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. In Iraq today, U.S. and Iraqi forces raided Sadr City, a Shiite militia stronghold led by anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, a man who Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki depends on for political support. Al-Maliki condemned the raid, said it was not endorsed by the Iraqi government, as U.S. officials said, and that it would not happen again. Al-Maliki also disputed that his government has established a time frame in which Iraqi security forces would be able to take over. He said that, quote, only the people who elected the government have the right to make time limitations or amendments, end quote. Yesterday, U.S. General George Casey said he believed Iraqi forces would be ready to take over in 12 to 18 months. In Baghdad, U.S. troops are still searching for a missing GI of Iraqi descent who was reportedly kidnapped earlier this week. And in Washington today, more than 200 active duty U.S. service members called for U.S. troops and bases to withdraw from Iraq. In New Jersey today, the Supreme Court ruled that gay couples should have the same rights as heterosexual couples. Lawmakers now have 6 months to either allow homosexuals to marry or offer them civil unions, which offer the same protections as marriage. In Miami, another former altar boy has stepped forward in the Mark Foley scandal. He says he was molested in the 1970s by the same priest that Foley says sexually abused him when Foley was a teenager. In southern Afghanistan, NATO troops killed at least 38 suspected insurgents. Elsewhere, NATO troops and Afghan police seized at least 9 tons of marijuana and more than 120 pounds of opium, which are believed to be helping fund the insurgency. U.S. officials have confirmed that an al-Qaeda operative who was wanted in connection with the 1998 U.S. Embassy bombings in Kenya and Tanzania is dead. DNA tests now show that he died in April during a Pakistani airstrike near its border with Afghanistan. Those embassy bombings killed 224 people, including 12 Americans. And in Mississippi, residents who suddenly found themselves homeless after Hurricane Katrina have filed a class action lawsuit. They say the defendants, including Chevron, ExxonMobil, and Xcel Energy, are responsible for releasing greenhouse gases into the air, which produce warm Gulf water, which resulted in Hurricane Katrina, which destroyed their homes. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Tune in to the Quality News Network on election night to learn the results of perhaps the most important midterm elections in our nation's history. QNN will go beyond the scorecard reporting of the numbers. We will delve into the reasons why America voted the way we did and what it may mean for our future. Over the past 6 months, QNN has conducted over 250 interviews with candidates in the 2006 elections. All of the candidates are challengers for House, Senate, and gubernatorial seats from all parties from all 50 states. You can hear these interviews at QualityNewsNetwork.com. These are the people who have carried the banner of democracy during this vital election campaign, and they will be joining us on the air to talk about their races, why they won or lost, and what they learned about the process and the voters. So tune in to the Quality News Network on election night and learn where we are going from those who are going to lead us. Now back to the news.
AIDS doctors in tropical regions have discovered a leprosy-like disease in patients who take antiretroviral drugs. The disease, which disfigures the skin, can be treated with antibiotics, but doctors are being warned that the disease could become more widespread. The Fed met for its second day of meetings today and decided to leave the key interest rate unchanged at 5.25%. 7-Eleven is pulling a controversial new beverage from its store shelves. The caffeinated drink, called cocaine, prompted complaints from parents. Amazon.com says it's not going to spend as much on new technology. Even though its third quarter sales were up 24%, its earnings dropped by more than a third due to heavy spending on new technology projects. A Silicon Valley hacker says he's unlocked Apple Computer's iPod and iTunes playback restriction code. The 22-year-old says he plans to license the code to others. Financier Carl Icahn has been named the new chairman of biotech drug maker ImClone. The company also reported its third quarter earnings were up 85%. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $61.62. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow had another record close. The Dow was up 7 points at 12,135, NASDAQ up 12 points at 2357, S&P 500 up 5 points at 1382. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, let's get right to it. Cassie is calling in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm good. Listen, the reason that I'm calling is I was listening to Sarge yesterday, and I heard from about Sarge, and I talked to Gara, and I talked to, and I heard Gara on your program last night. And people don't know that it's still so bad.
No, they don't.
And, I mean, I didn't know, and I listened to this kind of, I mean, I'm friends with Sarge, and I listen to this kind of radio all the time, and I didn't know at all. So what I want to do, I'm going to talk to my assistant principal tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put a jar and try and collect some money to help the people in Mississippi who still don't have so much, there's so much stuff they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And Gara said that a lot of what they need is furniture. And I know how to mail clothing. I don't know how to get furniture from one place to another.
Right.
But if other people live where they can donate furniture or someone can try and get stuff down there.
Well, I think you've
it's horrible.
Yes, it is. You've got a great idea, Cassie. And what I would suggest that you do, check around. Because you know there are a lot of aid organizations down there that the donations are suspect. So you want to make sure that your donations
go straight through Sarge and Ray.
Okay, then they know the organization. Yeah, as long as there's
they were going to do it direct. I don't think they're going to do an organization.
Wow.
I think it's like we send the money to Sarge and he brings it in cash.
Well, if yeah, that yeah,
one
yeah, somebody's got to step up into this breach, Cassie, and you know the kind of activism that you're talking about doing at your school, this gives me, you know, this is the kind of stuff that gives me hope for the future, because
this isn't activism.
Yes, it is.
How is it activism?
Because you're actively caring. You are becoming active in behalf of someone else. It's absolutely activism, and it's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's admirable. It's heroic.
It's not a heroic.
Yeah-huh. Yeah-huh.
It's just putting out a jar and sending money.
Okay, how many other people, Cassie, have just put out a jar and sent money?
For other things, but not for this.
Right, right. So, you know, I think I rest my case.
Okay.
Yeah. No. This is a step in the right direction of your own future, and I'm proud of you. Boy, am I proud.
Thank you.
You know this. You know I hope the spirit that motivates you now carries on as you grow older, because that gives us a fighting chance in this country. It really does. So, you know, work with the assistant principal, get it, and you know, talk it up too.
Oh, yeah.
Talk it up among your fellow students. Explain to them what's going on.
I'm going to talk about it in class. I'm going to see Ray is going to, well, Sarge said that Ray has a bunch of pictures from when they went yesterday, and I want to bring the pictures in and talk about it in social studies or talk about it in advisory, because people just don't know. I mean, it's...
No, it's off our radar. You know, we've got other things we're worrying about now. We have, you know, we have the attention span of peat moss now in this country. You know, our what we pay attention to is dictated by what we watch on the television, and if the television isn't there, it must not matter anymore.
Right.
You know, on the anniversary of Katrina, they showed up in New Orleans for a little while. On Mardi Gras,
it was only New Orleans. I don't hear anything about Mississippi.
No, you don't.
Do you hear anything about Mississippi?
No.
If I didn't know Sarge, I wouldn't have any idea there was a problem in Mississippi, even.
Well, you know, and you wouldn't have any idea there was a problem anywhere else, either, because it's not supposed to be a problem. George Bush and his Republican cronies, Cassie, they've got other things that they have to attend to right now.
They have to give more money to rich people.
Sure. Because, you know, the rich people need it worse than you do, or worse than people on the Gulf Coast do, or worse than people in the Ninth Ward do. Sure. That's the way they think. That's the way they operate. And it's shameful. And it's heartbreaking.
Gross. That's really gross.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the people who had their entire homes, lives, you know, everything they had tied up in their existence blown away. You know, their insurance company has told them, well, you know, you paid us those premiums all those years. That's too doggone bad because we're not going to pay you. And judges that were
not fair.
No, it's not fair.
America's not supposed to be like that.
No, it's not. But it has been taken away. And what they are stealing right now, Cassie, what is on the line here? It's not really so much what's going to happen to me. It's what's going to happen to your generation and my kid and Agnes and my kids' generation. You're the ones who are being ripped off now, not me.
Right, we're the ones who have to pay the bill for all this stuff.
You're exactly right. You know, you better go to college and you better get a good degree and you better get a graduate degree and you better get a job that pays you a ton of money because you have got some serious bills to pay because some hateful old men are stealing your future.
And I didn't get to vote on any of it.
Nope.
That's not fair.
I don't, you know, I think we need a law that says that.
Pat, you know what that is? We're reading about the Declaration in school.
Uh-huh.
This is the same thing. If they're going to make me pay in 10 years or 15 years for what they're doing now, that's the same taxation without representation that they were complaining about.
Precisely.
In the Declaration of Independence. And if it was the people who had to pay were the same as the people who were voting, and there was a fair election, then I think that they wouldn't be spending all the money on wars.
Exactly. If they had to behave, if they had to follow the rules, if they had to obey the law, they wouldn't be doing this kind of thing. Like we need a law that says that Congress can't pass cannot pass laws affecting what the next generation will have to pay out. It is not fair to you. It is taxation without representation. The
it's
greatest
point in the Declaration.
Yeah, the most unrepresented group of people in the United States is not the citizens of the District of Columbia. It is the citizens of this nation who are under 18.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get to vote on this. You don't. You just got to go along.
Uh huh.
Oh well, you know, George Bush has whipped out the credit card and he's run a debt up that's going to cost me thousands upon thousands of dollars when I'm an adult, and I just got to take it. But Cassie, that's the way they are. They are that way. This is what bullies do. Bullies beat up on people who are powerless. Bullies beat up on people who are helpless. Bullies beat up on people who cannot defend themselves. And that is exactly what these Republicans have done to your generation. And that's why we're here. Somebody's got to talk about this.
We need to make it stop. We need to stop them.
We do. And you know what? Whatever you do, you are helping us to stop them.
I'm trying.
Well, you're
succeeding. Can I tell you something else I'm doing that's trying?
Yes, please do.
I worked for Chris Bell over the summer, and he's running for the governor of Texas, and people should vote for him, because the way that it's looking now, if they vote for any of the independents, then Perry is going to win again.
That is that's a very great likelihood.
And so even if he's not like the perfect Democrat you would want, which he's not, but we should still vote for him anyway, because if people vote for other candidates, then Governor Perry is going to be the governor again, and he's no good.
Well, he's another guy who's ripping you off.
Yeah.
You know, that's your future in Texas that he's stealing. I mean, the stuff they teach you in school, Cassie, makes good sense in many ways. You know, they tell you basic things like don't steal from somebody else.
Right.
But it's kind of a slap in the face when you look up and you become politically aware like you have and you realize they're teaching me not to steal, but they're stealing from me while they're doing it.
Right.
You know, you're in a place that has supported George Bush, Rick Perry. You've got two just terrible, terrible senators in.
Oh, they're the worst.
Oh, Kay Bailey Hutchinson and John Cornyn.
I don't even write to them. Like, everybody says, write your senators. It's like, why bother? We just need to get new senators. Writing my senator didn't do anything.
Yeah, why waste the stamp? I know your feelings. I know exactly how you feel. And, you know, and so that's what, you know, you're not, I know it seems like it's going to be forever until you're 18. Okay.
I'm going to be 15 next week.
I know you are, and I'm a very happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
It may seem like forever till you're 18. I hope the birthday present, the first birthday present you will give yourself on your 18th birthday, Cassie, is to go and register to vote.
Actually, well, I've been looking at it. I am going to have to register before because the election's going to be like 3 days after I turn 18. So I'm going to have to register before I turn 18 so I can vote when I'm 18.
They won't let you. You cannot register until you're 18 years old.
But then there's only 3 days till you vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fair.
No, it's not. You are learning some very brutal lessons, Cassie. But give yourself that gift when you turn 18 and talk among your friends. I know you do. Talk among people who aren't your friends. This is, you know, it is so important that young people vote. You know, if the Democratic Party could motivate your generation to vote as diligently for political offices as they do on American Idol, we would not have a political problem in this country because young people routinely do not support Republicans because young people still have hearts and minds that have not been corrupted, like yours. So, you know, go, Cassie. We're rooting for you, and we know what you can accomplish.
Okay.
All right.
Well, 2028, vote for me for president.
2028?
2028.
Okay. I've written it down.
The first year that I can be president.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
We'll hold you to it. I'll write you. Don't make me write you from the nursing home.
Okay.
All right. You take care, Cassie.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. Oh, you know, I feel like.
She's wonderful.
No, don't. Agnes, don't tear up. Agnes is tearing up. She's wonderful, she says.
Agnes is not tearing up.
Yes, you. Now you're dripping on the microphone.
I am not, but
those
you know
things
what?
Short out.
With young women like that out there.
We have a chance.
We more than have a chance. The future's looking pretty bright. She is fantastic. And she can do anything she wants.
Absolutely.
We've just got to be here to support her.
She can do anything she wants as long as we try to make it possible. What's that song? John Fox was talking about it last night. A song from Pink. That says what happened to the girl who wanted to be president? She's singing backup for 50 Cent now. It rhymes. I didn't do it right. Let's go. Keep going with the phones. Cody's calling from the Bay Area. Hey, Cody, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob. Isn't Cass great?
I'd love her to death. I do.
I know. And she forgot to plug her column, which I read all the time, Political Team Tidbits at PowersandMorrison.com. And she does a great job, and she just her due diligence is something to admire.
Yes, it is. And you know, I want there to be a viable future for her. And
there will be.
You know, we're personally responsible for it.
Absolutely. And in a little bit of good news, I got a letter from Josh Wolf and the blogger in jail for blogging. And he just wanted to he wanted me to spread the message that there's a lot of people that gossip about him. He's in a federal prison, and they won't allow him to call out into any kind of radio programs or to express his dissent, but I'm going to do it for him.
Okay.
He wants people to know that the entire fight, the reason that he has taken this stand, is completely to make sure that he can protect the rights of the press and that those rights are recognized, or at least that the general populace becomes more aware of these tremendous issues. So the man's not holding anything back from the government that he's not supposed to. And I mean, if he was, I wouldn't be meeting with the San Francisco City Supervisor tomorrow to talk about this. I mean, he's got the support of the National Lawyers Guild, Reporters Without Borders, got his own publicist, he's got a lot of support, but no support in the mainstream media. And the reason for that is they are scared of us, they're scared of me, they're scared of Bob Kincaid, they're scared of the Horn, the new media, the old media, the LA Slimes, they're afraid of what we're doing here, because real progressives are not going out to the newspaper rack to get their news anymore. They're getting their news from citizens' media sources. Even Dan Rather has to have, if he wants to be on TV, he has to be on satellite TV.
Yeah, Well, exactly. I mean, the only time I drop two quarters in the machine and pull out the local newspaper anymore is if I've got some mackerel scraps that need wrapped. I mean, that's what it's good for. You know,
that's appropriate.
If I had a bird, I'd have to go get a newspaper to line the cage.
And you know, and another great point, I was doing some research in the law library today and came across this Supreme Court case that fit the bill for today, even though it was published in 1965. It said separation of powers was looked to as a bulwark against tyranny. The executive branch is the branch most likely to forget the bounds of its authority. And I mean, I came across that citation and I said, wow, that just rang true with exactly what's going on right now. Except that judiciary had a little bit more guts than today's judiciary.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, well, you know, that did. Cody, have you seen these articles about Tony Scalia's comments to the Italian American Association this past weekend?
No, I didn't. Enlighten me.
It's sickening. You know, he gets treated as if he is some great Solon, some leading light of conservative legal thought. You know, the fact that this is, you know, you talk about gutless. This guy is gutless. This guy wants to just, you know, he's just another lazy Republican supping at the public trough. He doesn't even want to do his job. He's making an argument that the court needs to stay out of issues that are of vital importance to this nation because there's nothing about gay marriage in the Constitution.
There's nothing about not having gay marriage in the Constitution.
Well, precisely, and beyond that, there is something in the Constitution that says every person who lives here and is a citizen is equal to every other person.
Yeah, he's kind of forgotten that part.
But
and I mean,
he doesn't want to do his job, and he wants to hide behind this notion that, I mean, there are so many things that you have to believe about the framers of the Constitution in order to buy into constitutional originalism. You have to.
Wow.
I mean, you.
It reminds me. Let me address that one because I'm working on writing a piece about just that whole originalism. He likes to throw around that word original intent of the Constitution. Yet he doesn't want to give any kind of fair trial or lawyers to these people down there in Guantanamo. However, John Adams represented the English soldiers who killed American colonists at the Boston Massacre.
Yes.
He lost half of his practice over it. People wanted to lynch him. But he fought for them, and he got them off, and he said it was one of the most manliest things that he had ever done. He was proud of it, and it was a selfless service to his country. And this is before the Declaration of Independence. This is 1770.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the guy who won the Hamdan decision gets canned by the Navy.
Oh, in the Hamdan decision, John Dean, who's been a whistleblower, not just in the context of Nixon, but also on Reagan, and then again on Lindsey Graham, because Lindsey Graham filed a fake friend of the court, fake amicus brief on the court, and he put in phony sections of the transcript of the Senate. He was trying to say, well, here's what Congress said, so I'm going to write to the friend court brief and enlighten Scalia as to what the congressional record and remarks were. But then the Hamdan lawyers looked at it, and then they went and checked his sources. They found that it was phony. It was doctored. He filed a false document for filing, and that's Title 18, United States Code 1001. That's offering a false document for filing on the court, and it's punishable by 5 years in federal prison.
Yeah, but
Graham is a criminal.
Yeah, sure he is. But you know, George Bush's cousin gets to run down a cop in New Haven last week, and the cops won't test him for alcohol. And Lindsey Graham gets to perpetrate a fraud on the court, and he gets away because that is how they are.
Do you know what Scalia's remarks were when the smart Hamdan lawyers brought this out to him? He said, "Oh, that's why I don't read the congressional record." Well, W just did.
Well, they're lazy. I can deal with differing legal theories of how you go about doing stuff and what you review and what you don't review, but at least do the job. Antonin Scalia doesn't want to work.
Yeah, and he also said in an article that Nathan Morrison did at PowersandMorrison.com, his remark was that
The Constitution gives out doesn't give out a lot of liberties, and that those liberties are to be ratcheted down in wartime. And really, it's a liberal document if you read it. And, you know, without the habeas corpus, Keith Olbermann did a heck of a job when he put all the Bill of Rights out.
Yeah, and just started checking them off. Yeah, that one's gone.
You can't, it has a cascading effect. Without being able to challenge your conviction, without being able to physically move, in fact, that's like the law dictionary definition, is to give you the ability to move into the court to petition them for what's going on and why you're a prisoner.
Well, that's like, you know, many state constitutions have a very blatant clause that's called the Open Courthouse Clause. And it says the doors of the courthouse shall be open to the people of this state. We've got one here in West Virginia. And that's very profound stuff. You can't get into a building that's closed. You can't get into a system that's closed. Go ahead.
And they'd like to weld those doors permanently shut.
And brick them over. Yeah. I mean, that's what the whole tort reform movement is. This isn't about some poor bedraggled corporation that had to pay too much money because it burnt a lady's crotch. This is about a corporate America that does not want to be responsible to the people that it harms. And if you can close the courthouse door to harmed people, then it's springtime for Hitler, you know? It's a beautiful walk in the garden for the corporatists.
It's also a dual effect. By doing that, the right has always demonized the lawyers. I watched an attack ad last night on CNN they were talking about where they said that so-and-so Democrat supports big labor and trial lawyers. And I was like, well, what's wrong with big labor and trial lawyers?
Yeah, good. I'm glad you do. Right.
But that was their attack ad. But see, the right has sold it on people that labor drives up, the labor union drives up your cost to your products, and that the trial lawyers are just going to go out and steal from you. But really what they're doing is, the reason why they attack them is because the trial lawyers give donations to the Democrats and they want to starve the Democrats.
Right. And because the Republicans have busted their humps trying to make sure that injured people can't get redress.
Well, of course, because they don't matter. And I was going through Armed Madhouse by Greg Palast, which is just such an amazing book. And I was thinking the strategy of the Democrats came to mind. How they don't attack your enemy, attack your enemy's strategy is what Sun Tzu said in The Art of War.
Yeah.
And instead of, and these Republicans, they like to say that we're not tough on defense. But then when people like Al Franken have to raise money to pay for body armor, when George Bush put in an order for 36 Hunter Seeker nuclear submarines, when nobody in Iraq or Afghanistan has any Hunter Seeker submarines, but these puppies cost $2.5 billion a piece.
Yeah.
And he wanted to buy 36 of them. I mean, good gosh, almost $50 billion with a B dollars for nuclear submarines, a full fleet of them, rather than body armor and Stryker vehicles over Humvees and Bradley fighting vehicles over paper-thin Humvees. What's practical here, or is this just a lot?
Let's ask an even deeper question, Cody. What's conservative there? Which is the conservative move?
It's just the lobbyist payoff, obviously.
Sure it is. And, you know, there was Joe Lieberman in his debate a couple of nights ago saying, well, you know, I saved the submarine base.
For what? For the Russians? Are we going to go to war with the collapsed Russian fleet that rots?
No, I'll tell you the honest thinking behind that, Cody, is the fact that the Chinese Navy is in a buildup that you cannot comprehend or I. And
I hope so. I hope that scares us into behaving.
Well, they you don't see a lot about it, but there is a significant buildup because eventually we're not going to invade them. The rounding error is not going to invade them. But they've got a burgeoning population, and sometimes I think they look up and think North America looks pretty doggone good.
Yeah, but right now we got to prioritize, and right now guys are dying in the sand,
right,
in the Middle East, and the money needs to go to helping the guys dying in the sand in the Middle East and practical gear for them.
Exactly.
That's conservatism, if you, rather than blowing money on something that may or may not be a threat in the future,
people can guess and grasp for straws in the future all they want to, but right now the practical money for people who really support the troops to put themselves off is a pro-military party that the military overwhelmingly supports and should not, especially after they cut half of the budget for the brain surgery center. I mean, come on. They
right.
want to get fiscally conservative by trimming the veterans' benefits?
I know.
Wake up, people in the military. Ed.
Well, I don't see. There's another one of those. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Cody. There's another one of those stories out there, and I'm getting awfully daggum tired of them. This one comes from Salon. It's a little bit of what Lee was talking about earlier. You know, two more U.S. generals call for democratic takeover.
We'd be smart. We don't cut the military. I mean, really, Howard Zinn is great because in the People's History of the United States, he totally counters that whole thing that Clinton was just shredding the military. It was still a huge military budget that they had. It's not like the Democrats are just going to obliterate the military. People, I mean, just look at the facts, and that's the problem. Is that it's so hard to get to the facts. You've got to dig and get methodical about it before you can... You can find them, but the Democrats aren't going to destroy the military. They're going to handle the military wiser.
Well, sure they will. Because
they aren't going to have no
because a lot of them have been in the military, Cody, unlike these damn Republicans. These guys have been there. But, you know, once again, this is and it starts out this way. Two retired senior Army generals who served in Iraq and previously voted Republican are now openly endorsing a Democratic takeover of Congress. They retired. They've got their benefits. They're making the long once-a-month walk to the postal box. And now they've got a conscience.
Well, now they can afford to be. I mean, they aren't going to get chastised. But who is that guy?
Shinseki.
Who is?
It's Batiste.
Courageous man.
Yeah, and Paul Eaton.
And I believe he's a Republican.
They both voted Republican.
And he went out there and said in front of Congress that 99% of the people in Abu Ghraib are innocent. And that they were just running around rounding up people. And this scares me when I hear this. This isn't coming from PrisonPlanet.com or something. This is coming from, you know, the Congressional Record, and this is coming from a two-star general. And, good gosh, I get scared when I hear that kind of stuff, because they're doing it in another country, but, you know, Germany was doing stuff in another country, too. It can come home to affect them.
Sure it can. It's like the conversation I had last night with... Chris Floyd from Truthout, you know, all this stuff that these computer programs, these surveillance programs that are being used to, you know, we're looking at the foreign press, you know, horse hockey. This is designed, it's sentiment analysis. This is designed for looking at what you're writing, Cody.
Yes, well, I just turned the page back in Armed Madhouse, and Greg's talking about Choice Point and how if the federal government can't violate your rights under the Constitution, they'll just farm out the job to Choice Point, who Sarge has even touched on this, and domestically, but Choice Point also internationally on what you're saying, going through Venezuela, Mexico, Argentina, those aren't the Middle East, but they're going and they're doing their little snooping around there as well.
Sure they are. They were, you know, these data miners were active in the Mexican elections. Why do you think it came out the way it did?
Yeah, that's, I know, and the only guy, Greg was the only guy who was reading his blog when he was down there covering it.
Yeah.
No one else wanted to cover it.
No, well, you know, it's journalism, if you get right down to it, and this kind of takes us full circle on the call, Cody, and I'm glad it's worked out this way, journalism is hard work. It really is. I mean, it's not some guy with a snap-brim fedora sitting around smoking Lucky Strikes and chatting up the local beat cop. It is hard work. There is skull sweat. There are learning curves that are hard to imagine. If you're going to be credible, you've got to get to the point where you can understand what it is that you are writing and or broadcasting about. It is hard work. And the people who are doing so-called journalism now don't want to do that hard work. Greg Palast does the hard work. You know, you're doing the hard work. Sergeant Ray down on the coast, wandering around, walking around, talking to people, is the hard work of journalism. It's dangerous. Sometimes it's scary. It's creepy. And you run across stuff that you would just as soon turn away from. But if you are dedicated to the proposition that the Fourth Estate means something, then you can't turn away. And a bunch of people who call themselves a press corps, who knock off at 4 o'clock every Friday and go and hobnob with the same people they're writing about, are by definition already compromised.
Well, they're in the house,
and we're out in the field.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, and more of the public is realizing that. More of them ought to realize that. The TV will burn a hole in your brains to stay away from it. And I so much love the horn, I almost wanted to throw my MiFi out the window today because even the satellite radio has gotten so bad that I'm just going to have to get an iPod and just podcast your shows from the day before, because I got to have something while I'm driving, and it's got to be better than, except for BBC World Services. They do an excellent job.
Yeah, they do an excellent job. And you
have to concentrate and listen. It is not this leisure stuff that comes out of the lips of CNN, which was horrible last night.
Oh, they're just terrible. Any day, every now and then, I look at CNN's homepage, and there'll be like two real news stories and 15 fluff pieces. And I know there's more news going on in the United States than that.
And they force Keith Olbermann to cover the fluff stories. I've been noticing that. He doesn't want to. His attitude changes when he has to talk about Tom Cruise. He doesn't want to. He wants to talk like Bob Kincaid talks 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday, but they won't allow him to because he's on the television. And he's got to put on the smiley face and talk and split his show up between about 50% politics and 50% current events and keeping tabs on the celebrity.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, his check is still signed by GE, and you can bet Keith Olbermann damn well knows it.
He does. He has pushed hard on a few issues, but look forward to more. I need more. It's watered down.
Yeah, I need 2 hours. I need 2 hours of Keith Olbermann, not one.
And only while he's doing a special comment rant, too, because he doesn't rant belligerently. He just focuses in that Murrow style and just gives you the truth eloquently.
Well, yeah, when Keith does a special comment, it reminds me of those discussions, quotes around that word, that I used to have when I was a kid. It's like a lecture from your dad where you're going, but in this case, he's right, and you're sitting there, go, Dad, go. You know, tell the spoiled little brat George Bush. Tell him, we caught him, he did it, you tell him, Keith.
What a child. That man Bush is just a baby. He needs to grow up. He's not flexible. He lies way too much, and he's just downright stubborn. He's so stubborn to the detriment of his party and to the detriment of the American people. And, you know, even if I was full-on Republican, I'd give the Democrats 2 years. It's only 2 years. Give us a 2-year contract and see how we go.
Yeah, exactly, because you guys haven't been able to... Well, I get emails from Republican the people who listen, friends, people, and they're like, you know, I hate George W. Bush. And I'm sorry, I guess I'm a mean person, Cody, but I write back and I say, then why did you do this to us? We told you. We told you in 1999 exactly what kind of a president George Bush was going to be, and we have been proven right. Why won't you listen?
And you've done the public service announcement. We've chose a different man by a wise margin, and his name wasn't Bush.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Cody, I got to roll on. Man, what a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
That was fun. Have a good night.
You too. Bye now. And on to David in Tennessee. David, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Let's go back to Cassie for a minute.
Okay.
I think that was tonight's show, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. I want to vote for her this year. Never mind 2028. I want to vote for her this year.
I understand. Yeah.
I can't. I understand that. Now then, if anybody has any contact with her, she said something about she knew that furniture was at a premium, but how the heck do you get furniture down there? It doesn't matter where she lives. If she can put together any sort of a drive, which would be just the most remarkable thing ever, to put together a bunch of used furniture, doesn't have to be pretty, and I see it out by the curb constantly around here. And if you've got nothing, a recliner with stains can look really nice.
Yeah.
And this idea will work because it depends on the desire of an American business segment wanting to do more business. I guarantee you within 25 miles of wherever she is, there is a duly licensed ICC authorized freight terminal for some truck line.
Okay.
And if she just gets anybody above the dispatcher on the phone,
I'm 15 years old, and I'm putting together a drive to send used furniture to Katrina victims. She'll probably have freight lines tearing her phone off the wall.
Yeah.
To donate a single load-down deadhead back, because out of their pocket, that's only, I mean, a truckload rate for 40,000 pounds of anything going 500 miles is about $450, $500. They will get $10,000 worth of publicity out of it and be glad to do it. So if she can somehow motivate a bunch of folks to donate a bunch of furniture, just start looking around for a freight terminal and ask them who a sales rep is or somebody in regional marketing, and I guarantee you it'll fall into place so quickly.
And probably even find somebody local who will donate the self-storage where the furniture can be put until you've got the truckload put together.
There you are. Or spot a trailer with their name on it right in the middle of the high school parking lot.
Ooh.
Fill it up with furniture for Katrina victims. I guarantee you, I'll bet you on that one.
I won't take the bet because, no, you're right. Yeah, that's great thinking.
That old business routine, if you dangle the greatest publicity ever in front of something like a freight line, you know, there's a lot of freight being hauled, but at the same time, they're still fairly competitive. They want to set themselves apart, and I bet you that'll work. Now then, not a minute of tonight's show should be discarded. It's, you know, one of the best. But I don't think I heard anything about a little blurb that George put out today, and I've heard almost all the show.
Haven't gotten there yet. You're right.
Well, I don't know if it's the one you're thinking about, but I just about, you know, I started casting about for the Elvis gun when this line of questions, there was only about three of them. George can't follow more than a couple of three. Who's responsible, Mr. President, if you're not really happy with how it's going in Iraq? Is it Rumsfeld's fault, and are you going to let him go? Which, you know, should have happened a long time ago, but that's another topic for another whole show. And he fumbled around and stumbled around and finally said, well, you know what? The responsibility's right here. The responsibility rests right here with me. You know, because in 2004, that was a referendum on our policy. And look, here, we're in office. So I'm responsible. The responsibility is right here. And then there was the smirk. There was that little internal chuckle that pulls one corner of that twisted little mouth up. if they're unhappy about it, let them write the president. Just write me. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did.
Is that the most incredibly obvious case of screw you, America? Eat it and smile, America. Take it and like it. I can throw away five more letters than you can write on your best day. I'm king, you're not. It doesn't matter what you think.
You know, I remember, and this went on for weeks and months, David, I remember back when Ron Brown was killed in the plane crash, and Bill Clinton went to the funeral. And the oxymoron still had his failed television show going. And for weeks he went on about the fact that the camera caught Bill Clinton smiling at one point, and then Limbaugh said, oh, but look, he sees the camera. Now he's grief-stricken. And he absolutely tried to beat Bill Clinton to death for being the most insincere bastard who had ever occupied 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
I'll guarantee you, and if anybody has ever been in the situation I'm going to describe, there are going to be heads nodding all over your listenership. That tells me Rush Limbaugh's never been to a funeral. If you care about the person headed for the deep six, your emotions fly up and down like,
well, exactly,
like nobody's business. And out of the blue will be that time that you and that person did this crazy thing or saw that funny whatever, and you smile for a second and turn to a pal and say, boy, there was that time in Kansas City with the Ducks. And then the tears come because, you know, those will never happen again.
Ain't going to be no more Ducks, and ain't going to be no more Kansas City.
And there's certainly not going to be any more of that person headed for the...
Well, exactly. And but of course, we won't hear that about... let them write to the president. You know, what you get instead... God, I love the way you open doors. What you get instead is something that I ran across from the blog Wonkette. And, a letter from a soldier to the publisher at Wonkette. A soldier writes, or a Marine, I am currently stationed in Al-Takadam, Iraq, with the Marines. You've done a short piece about this before, but this is getting ridiculous. It seems that every non-conservative politics website has been blocked by our firewall guys, including your site. The reason it is blocked is because it is a personal page, which means they don't have a reason to block it, but they want to block it, so they do. This was done recently, just in time for midterm elections. As I said, it was not only your website. I've gone through lists of liberal sites, and most of them are blocked. I've also taken the time to go to some conservative sites, none of which are blocked. I don't have the words to describe how I feel. They've sent me to this desert three times, each time saying that we are defending freedom, which is BS and everyone knows it. And on top of that, they've taken away many of the freedoms that we're supposedly fighting for. I don't think there's much anyone can do about this, but I just wanted you to know that this was still going on.
Well,
they can write the president.
Yeah, right, yeah. A lot of good it'll do. He won't even, they're not going to be read. They're not going to be noticed.
They're not going to be delivered. They tell the Postal Service everything that's, all the mail for the, take it, put it and through the shredder and into the dumpster. At the post office. Right after I doubt if they even scan it for the anthrax anymore. It just goes straight into the incinerator.
Precisely. But that's our little chimp in charge. That's our little chimp in charge. Well, I got one other little blurb I want to throw at you before I leave room for the last caller, or last two or three, or however many are out there. There's a book that's just come out. I forget the gentleman's name that's written it, but the title is a simple one-word thing. It's called Vice, and it's about Cheney. And I tried to scan some parts of it that I found online, and there's no need to get the book because it so frightened me and so scared me. I don't know if I've never heard you mention it. I don't. Maybe it's common knowledge, but does America really know that he has the largest staff of anybody within the White House? And does anybody know that the names are considered classified information, and the numbers and the money that is spent for his personal staff? It's no wonder that Colin Powell didn't know what was going on. It's no wonder that nobody knows. It's the Rumsfeld, Cheney, just in the dark, behind the scenes staff. They may, some people feel, outnumber the entirety of the rest of the White House staff. And by Cheney's edict, it's protected information, and no one can even know who they are, nor how many of them, or how much money he's spending on it.
Why am I not surprised?
Well, I am and I'm not, but it's so blatantly obvious that there's all of that structure.
Well, this is the same crowd. If you go on Google Earth, if you
Star
go
Chamber.
Yeah. I mean, you can't even look at the United States Naval Observatory grounds on Google Earth anymore because it's classified. It's blurred out.
Well, I think there's a lot less harmful things going on at the Naval Observatory than, you know, 75 or 100 hand-picked neocons. Just think of it.
But, I mean, that's the vice presidential residence.
But just think about the point of the fang that we know about that drips venom all the time. Wolfowitz, Cheney, no, who? Norquist, guys like that. Just the tip of the fang.
Well, see, and that's why they got so upset when, the federal court ordered the vice president to disclose the list of visitors. Just last week, and Cheney's lawyers had an absolute purple polka dotted blue screaming hissy They screamed, national security, national security. No, it is not national security to find out how many times Jeff Gannon visited the vice presidential residence as well.
Well, it is according to him.
Well, yeah. Because if you, you know, but that's the thing. If you are one of those monsters that can only operate in darkness.
In a 65-degree room.
Yeah. Then any hint of sunlight is terrifying. This isn't national security, David. This is Cheney security. This is Republican security. Plain and simple.
I think George is going to go to that nice ranch in Uruguay and just run the whole damn works from a fax machine. You know, because Cheney's been dead at least four times. You know, he's an android now.
Yeah.
It's like Donovan's Brain, that old movie from the 50s. They just, you know, they figured out a way to put some mechanical items around his brain.
I am Dick Cheney.
God. With a few bits of Richard Nixon's thrown in the boat.
Yeah, some of this is straight. Well, I know you don't have cable, but some of this is straight out of Futurama, a wonderful cartoon where Richard Nixon's head in a jar comes into play from time to time.
Is that the one that has the one-eyed woman with the great figure with the voice? Married with children.
Yeah, Katie. Yeah,
well, I've seen that a few times. That's nice entertainment. Well, I'm going to get out of the way. You're either going to wrap it up, or there's going to be some incredible caller.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap it up, David.
Well, Bob, thanks for the chance, and boy, it sure is nice to see the show perking along.
Oh, it is. Thanks for your help in making it perk.
Yeah, not me. It's Cassie. That's the future.
You are right. You are right.
Well, that was 100%. A C or a K. I want to get that right when I put that on that. You know, and
no, that's Cassie. Phone. That's Cassie with a C.
I'm going to write that in for president. I'm going to make sure I spell that correctly. I got to get practiced up before 2028.
All right. Later. We'll see you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, it is 8 minutes before the hour, and we are more or less done for the evening. Just a last thought. I mentioned earlier in the program the death of Paul Wellstone. And I remember the conclave or whatever of the college Republicans, where the head of that filthy organization bragged about putting Norm Coleman into the Senate of the United States. And he said, by God, we had to kill Paul Wellstone to do it, but we did. Youthful braggadocio? Probably. Probably. But some of Wellstone's words, that at one point someone asked him about whether or not he could ever be president, and Paul Wellstone responded, I'm short, I'm Jewish, and I'm a liberal. But it's worth remembering. When even Democrats in the Senate were soiling themselves to hurry up and vote to give George Bush the authority to murder Iraq, Paul Wellstone said no. Paul Wellstone said no. This is something Paul Wellstone said. Quote, politics is not just about power and money games. Politics can be about the improvement of people's lives, about lessening human suffering in our world, and about bringing about more peace and more justice. Paul Wellstone is gone. Paul Wellstone is sorely missed. Looking at a blog here, and the writer says, what would America be like if Senator Paul Wellstone had still been in the U.S. Senate? Well, for one thing, Republican Norm Coleman would not be a U.S. Senator. You can bet Paul would have led a filibuster fight against the nominations of now Justices Alito and John Roberts. My guess is that he would have stood with Russ Feingold and called for the censure of the president, a position that no other Democrats have the courage to take. It is 4 years now. It is 4 years now that Paul Wellstone is gone. It is 4 years and 2,800 American fighting men and women. And you know what? I feel the loss. I feel the absence of him. I see the absence of him in Democrats who will not stand up to these monsters. And I wonder where the next Wellstone is. He said the future will not belong to those who sit on the sidelines. The future will not belong to the cynics. The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. So, do yourself a favor. Remember Paul Wellstone this evening. Remember what we lost. Remember what was taken from us. And ask yourself, where we would be had he not been taken from us. And then ask yourself, who will pick up the torch that fell when he died? We can't begin to imagine what we lost when we lost Paul Wellstone. Who will pick up that torch? Paul Wellstone would tell you that you yourself can pick up that torch. The change that has to happen in this country does not have to happen inside the hallowed halls of the Senate, where, you know, some senators contribute money to something called the Republican Senate Campaign Committee that puts out sleazy, racist, bigoted ads in Tennessee trying to scare people into thinking that Harold Ford is coming for the white women. It doesn't have to happen there. It can happen on your street. It can happen in your home. It can happen at the gas station, the convenience store, the grocery store. It can happen if on November the 7th you drive people to go and vote. And after you've driven them back home, you get another load of people and take them to go and vote. Paul Wellstone would have said it wasn't about being Paul Wellstone. It was about being an American. November 7th is coming, and it is going to continue to get uglier and uglier and uglier. But we're in that Republican cesspool now, and we might as well, like I said, get to the other side and get cleaned up. Because if you turn around and go back, you're still going to have to cross it sooner or later. Fight back. Make change. Encourage people to get out and vote. We must have a high turnout. We just have to. Because a low turnout will give it all to the Republicans. Get hold of your local Democratic committee. Ask them how you can help. Volunteer. Volunteer your vehicle, your time, your phone banking skills. Do something. Help. Please. Agnes produced the show tonight and did so wonderfully. John Fox is the chief engineer. Brian Reznor announces. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the podcasting and the archives of all the programs on the Horn. Peter Godbold is our IT professional, and we appreciate all of his help. We have wonderful moderators and news ninjas at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com blog. All of this happens every night because there are several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and Millwrights who build the American dream every day. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.